us.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. I know football season starts Saturday, but the Cleveland Guardians are on a bit of a heater. Austin Hedges' two-run shot in the sixth powered the Guardians to a 4-2 win over the Angels last night in Anaheim. Cleveland's back to 500 with the win. 2.5 games back of the White Sox for the top spot in the AL Central. Guardians and Angels are back out tonight at 9:38. As for the Reds, Cincinnati was shut out last night in San Francisco 5-0. Redlegs and Giants are back at it tonight at 9:45. You can hear that game following the Buckeye Show. Ohio State football is 12 days out from hosting Ball State Saturday, September 5th. Week zero in college football, like I said, begins Saturday with North Carolina and TCU in Dublin, Ireland. And the NFL preseason wraps up this week. The Browns will host the Patriots Thursday night at 8 p.m. This update is sponsored by Roosters. Roosters is giving away 12 ultimate Buckeye experiences. We're talking tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register today and every day at roosterswings.com.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tiberi here.
Well, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then,
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Tuesday edition of the program. Bo and the boys back and better than ever. Completely whole. Baked back today. We'll do it live for the next three of them. Pretty loaded up for you. Little Real Truth coming your way at 10 o'clock. Will the receivers who replace the receivers in South Bend be more effective than the ones who are in South Bend? We'll get into that coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. 10:15 NFL owners behaving badly. My God, this just, it's succession. The way that this stuff plays out. We'll get into this story coming up at 10:15. 11 o'clock, 2 days continues. We are in the NFC East. We will hit the G-Men and the Washington Commanders as well on that side of things. Ryan Day was available yesterday. He had a very funny interaction with Bill Rabinowitz. And Bill asked a question if Ryan was happy with his offseason. Here was Coach Day's answer.
I'm not happy with it. Don't you put those words in my mouth. Yeah. Happy.
Well, you haven't complained about this position group or that position group.
There's no blaming, complaining, or defending in this program, so I'm not going to do that.
How happy are you with the progress, and what are your concerns?
I'm not happy about it at all. Let me change my total tune, if that's what you got out of this. I'm pissed off about everybody. I think we're working. I think we have a monster schedule, and I think that, you know, we have 51 new guys, so there's a lot of unknown. A lot of unknown. We know, you know, what's coming here. There's going to be storms along the way. But, you know, I think our guys have the right attitude. I think we have a chance to be a smart team, but we're going to have to be a disciplined team. And the first step to being a championship team is to not beat yourself. We've talked about this before. And so we have to make sure we're doing that. I will say this, in the scrimmage, there were too many penalties. Too many penalties. That's discipline. We cannot beat ourselves early in the season. We are going to be, you know, all over that part of it. There's a lot of areas that we got to improve in fast. But there's also a lot of things that I've seen that are encouraging. So that's been good, but we're nowhere near where we need to be.
So it's probably to the point, as I'm a man, I'm in my 40s and the back end of the 40s at this point, and it's very likely that most of the things that shape my opinion on sports are rooted in some form of now get off my lawn, that you kind of become one of these as you get older. You end up kind of wearing the same clothes or from the same, so you don't have to think about these things. You kind of get set in your ways, and you kind of think that everything that you did in the past was the best. It's nostalgia, right? It's powerful. It's potent, and it's very, very powerful. And so I do find myself being guilty of that, of trying to believe or make it seem that everything that we did in the old days was great. And in the old days in college football, and
quite honestly, in professional football and in high school football, you had these massively long training camps that lasted for weeks. And had in the NFL, I mean, we scoff at four preseason games or three. They'd have six preseason games. Camp would last for 7-8 weeks. Same thing in college football. The legendary, you know, the Junction Boys stuff with Bear Bryant when he was at Texas A&M. The legendary Woody Hayes camps that lasted weeks on end and no end in sight and just condition. Same thing in high school. I mean, I remember being when I first got to South Georgia 25 years ago and was covering some of those powerhouse programs in South Georgia and the high school side of things. And they would start practice in like second week of July. They'd start going and they'd have jamborees the first week of August and then their season would start. It wouldn't end until the week before Christmas. It was basically half the year they were playing football in the state of Georgia. I think the difference, though, is, and this is the opposite of the normal thinking that I have, most of these kids are in great shape. And I think that goes for the most part, high school kids, certainly high school kids and high school programs that take it very seriously. It absolutely applies to Ohio State football players. Like, Ryan Day doesn't have to get these guys in shape. They never get out of shape. The body doesn't ever rest. They train year round. There's Bob Mick all off season. It goes right into it. They have 10 days off all summer. Like, they've been doing this on their own nonstop, and it's probably even more so in the National Football League, where you talk to guys who played. I remember talking to Doug Deacon about this with the Browns, and you know, they had to make ends meet in the offseason. They were carpenters. They do handyman work. Deke has told these great stories about how he would go to like Canton and play like the police, like the Canton police in basketball for like money. Like, they would do stuff like that to like make ends meet and make appearances and things to do in the offseason. They weren't training nonstop. They weren't having summer workouts in Miami for 2 weeks. They weren't doing all of these things. This is a long way of just saying that we are currently in a very big dog days of summer from a football perspective, both college and pro. Ohio State's been at it for 3 weeks. They have the rest of this week and another week before they actually play a game. Like, quite honestly, this feels like this should be game week, but they have all of this week and all of next before they play Ball State. You think about it from the NFL side of things. Yesterday, the Browns obviously made the decision, Todd Monken did, to go with Deshaun Watson as quarterback. And you say, well, does he have time to get enough reps to be ready? My God, he's got 3 full weeks to get ready. He's got an entire training camp to get ready. They don't play until, what, September 12th? It might be time to rethink some of the amount of time that these guys spend in camps. It might be time to just kind of acknowledge that you don't need, in the NFL especially, I think it's more of an NFL problem than it is a college problem, honestly, guys, you don't certainly need 3 preseason games. Nobody knows what to do with them. The idea that you're going to play a preseason game on Thursday, and for example, I mean, we're the flagship of the Browns, you're going to play a preseason game Thursday up in Cleveland against the Patriots. Neither Mike Vrabel nor Todd Monken is going to play a single person who is going to start. They're not going to, they very likely won't play a single person who is going to be in the 2 deep on either team. This is going to be the 3s and 4s. Al Michaels is calling this game. This is an Amazon Prime game. Al Michaels is calling a game that is going to feature Dillon Gabriel and Talon Green on the Brown side of things. And I don't even know on the Patriots side of things. We don't know what to do with our hands. That's where we are with all of this practice. It's too damn much. And I think what Ryan was saying yesterday is sometimes you have to like make, and maybe he's a football coach, he's always worried about everything, but I think sometimes you have to create like chaos or issues that aren't there in order to keep guys kind of locked in, because this all just gets so long and we're all just waiting for football that quite honestly should start already.
As long as Ryan doesn't do the thing like Urban did, which is make up fake quotes, I think you'll figure it out. I do think with the calendar, and there has been discussion about having less spring ball, more early summer, late spring ball. Like, so you move it to May, June. Yeah. Again, this will all happen, in my opinion, once they expand the college football playoff. I think the calendar then gets a rework. Right now, you're kind of stuck in to. Whatever's going on is how it's formatted, how it's formulated to work against common sense. When the playoff goes to, what, 14, 16, 20, 24 teams, then I do think you get a reworked schedule to where you're pushing games, you're pushing week zero earlier in August, which I do think will allow for more flexibility with what is training camp now and then to what is spring ball. I just think those are just will be naturally occurring corrections once you've obviously added more games to this slate. And so I think that the ripple effect will obviously happen with college football. I don't know if anybody knows what the hell to do with the NFL. Because
they don't.
They add what? They'll add an 18th game in, what, two, three seasons from now, and then maybe the give for the get for the Players Association is one less preseason game or maybe less weeks on the OTA schedule. But for NFL coaches, it does feel like they want more and more and more actual time with their players.
Coaches are always going to
want
more time. They just don't need it. They don't need more time. They just don't. And I think on the end, I think it's actually a much bigger NFL problem than it is a college problem. I think the college calendar is just a total mess. But I think the NFL camp thing's a mess, and the preseason football's a mess. And to me, go to 18 games, go one preseason game that's basically just a make the roster game, and go from there. Have a couple joint practices where you can see where your guys are. That's really all you need. Like, nobody needs... No one's playing these preseason games, Bake. I mean, this is supposed to... In the old days, the third preseason game was the dress rehearsal game. And nobody knows what to do.
And I'm totally on the opposite end of most with that. I think you need preseason games. I think there's very few times in practice where you're tackling and you're bringing guys to the ground. And I understand the risk of injury, and these guys are making a lot of money and all that. But I think, like, the only way you get better at tackling is do it. And we all complain about, gosh, tackling sucks in football now. Or we complain about some of these games when they matter early on being real sloppy. Well, it's because these guys aren't getting reps like they used to. And the practice stuff, maybe you need to be more efficient with it. But I am one who thinks that taking away preseason games is only going to hurt the regular season product, especially that first month of the season.
Maybe, but if you look at the teams that win Super Bowls, a ton of them recently play none of their veterans in the preseason. Whether it be Seattle last year, Philly, the Rams, nobody. I mean, for years, the Rams played nobody in the preseason. Kyle plays nobody in the preseason. And really what it comes... The reason that they love the joint practices so much, Bake, is you get what you're talking about, but you get it controlled. So you get hitting, you get to see where you're at, but you get control of it. In other words, you don't get put quarterbacks in harm way. You have quick whistles on running backs, like those type of things. And really what it's a battle of attrition. Like, how can we get to a place healthy and whatever that can be? And you just sense the frustration. You can sense it. When Todd Monken said that yesterday, we got 3 weeks. I thought, my God, they do. They have three full more weeks. They're going to play a game on Thursday in the preseason, and then they have 2.5 full weeks after that before they actually play another game. And so I think it's more of an NFL problem than a college problem. But even in college, I think it could be amended a little bit to just tighten it up. I think, Reese, you're right. When they go to that kind of that NFL calendar of the mini camps, then I think they're kind of onto something. Because spring football, where it lands, doesn't make a whole lot of sense with everything else they're doing in the sport. Ryan Day with some candid thoughts about not being happy with his roster. Some very candid thoughts on his wide receiver room and that depth. Speaking of thoughts on the wide receiver room, Jeremiah Smith on a newcomer to that room. We'll have that for you coming up next as well. We're off and running. Bishop and Friends right here.
Morning Juice is now on YouTube. Weekday morning starting at 6. If you're a fan of Bobby Carpenter, he's ready to attack and dominate. If you're a fan of Jeff Bedoff, drive directly to a hospital. Seriously, the fan weather
from the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We've had a good day of weather so far, and that'll continue for the rest of your Tuesday. Mostly sunny skies, just those passing fair weather clouds this afternoon. Highs in the upper 70s. Partly cloudy skies overnight, lows in the upper 50s. Still partly cloudy for your Wednesday, just a touch warmer with highs pretty close to 80. For the fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Certainly was an attention getter when you saw Quincy Porter and Mylon Graham transfer out of Ohio State. Both guys are listed right now on the R Lads for what that's worth. That's really about as good as we're going to get from a depth chart standpoint right now until we get a little bit closer. Then hopefully we'll start to see some of those things. But both those guys listed as starters over in South Bend for Marcus Freeman's team. And yet you didn't get really any sense of any panic about either of the defections from Ohio State, which probably told you a little bit about the real truth on what the Buckeyes think of both of them. Now, some of this can also just be the reality of how many resources can you have in a single room? And obviously, the resources committed to Jeremiah Smith are pretty big, as they should be, and probably Chris Henry and Ennis and everybody else. So if you're going to lose guys that you put this type of emphasis in, you have to make sure that the guys coming in are up to the task of replacing them. Ryan, available yesterday, commented on his wide receiver depth and the amount of guys who can make an impact.
Six good play. Phil Bell and even Dez, those guys can find themselves playing and rotating in. They've been having a good camp. They're working hard out there and showing up. And it's been good. Good competition on both sides. We'll see. And then special teams will play into it. You know, who gets on the field on special teams is critical. We've always said that, you know, if it's a tie, it's going to go to the guy who plays on special teams. Our depth, again, at wide receiver is way better than it was last year, in my opinion. There's a lot of guys you'll see play this season.
Six? Is that the real truth?
That would be a departure from what Brian had done when he was the wide receivers coach. I mean, if you're going to be critical of Brian Hartline of anything while he was here, I would say a fair criticism, and it's hard because he was probably the best in the business when he was here and as good as anybody's ever coached a wide receiver room, was his just unwillingness to play depth. And basically what would happen is you're top two or three. And in the old days, it was kind of okay because guys would be patient for a year and then play. But like, you know, Jameson Williams is a great example of this, that he kind of waited his turn and then got impatient and ended up going to Alabama. So I do think that is a fair criticism of the way Brian ran the room, Bick.
Is it an unwillingness to play depth on Brian Hartline's part? Or as we talked about with the linebacker room mm-hmm. this year for Ohio State, last year you weren't taking Sonny or Arvell off the field. And no. In the last few years, like Marvin Harrison, let's not forget, couldn't get on the field as a freshman. Mm-hmm. But who were you taking off? You weren't taking Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, or Jackson Smith and Jigba off the field. And then after that, you weren't taking Marv or Emeka off the field. Last year, you weren't taking Jeremiah or Carnell off the field. And this is what I wonder about with the six when we get into the season. Is it going to be the same thing, especially if Ohio State, and I have to see it to change my mind on it, just because there's been a track record the last 2 years of Ohio State trying to slow games down and less plays. And when we get into the season, is it advantageous, no matter how good Brock Boyd is, to take Chris Henry Jr. off the field? Because we know Jeremiah's not coming off the field.
Yeah, and probably Brandon not much either. Reese, this goes to one of our, you and I's favorite soapboxes, right? We want to see the backups run the full complement of the offense. So if you just keep playing football with backups up big in some of these games, like Ball State, just keep playing football.
Kent State as well.
Yeah, just keep throwing it. Like, you know, Jeremiah's not out there. Julian's not out there throwing it. But you don't need to go to 3 yards in a cloud of dust, milk the clock, fewer plays. Like, you know, if you want to develop depth, I would use games to develop depth and to feed the kids that are hungry. That would probably be my approach to that. Bake, you bring up a good point. Like, you take those guys off. No, you don't. But you can sprinkle some guys in during the course of the game. And if you're going to play six, then you're going to have to play. And if you're going to play six and they're going to actually play receiver, well, then you're going to have to run the full complement of the offense. And quite honestly, depending on what happens with Julian, I mean, I think we're operating this year under the kind of the pretense that Julian's going to play this year and go to the NFL, right? I mean, that's where I am. I'm not wishing it, but you guys don't think he's right. I mean, am I off on
unless
that?
Things go horribly wrong?
I don't see Julian saying back.
No,
as I think he's going to be a first round pick, because I don't see things going horribly wrong, quite frankly, for this team.
No. So I guess I'm going to that might be an interesting thing, just to see where the fan base is on it. Like, where are you with Julian? Do you anticipate this is the last year of Julian Sain at Ohio State, or do you think that he'll play a third season?
Bo, I can say when we first started talking about this a little bit a month ago and like some of the Julian disrespect and everything, and I wonder if this has changed, and this baffled me, but there were a lot of people on social media or in the YouTube chats that were like, I hope Julian's gone after this year. I want to see Tavian St. Clair.
Careful what you wish for.
Well, that's not sure why, but
I'm not sure Tavian's even the backup. So, you know, this does go to the point I was about to make, though. If we are going to live in a world where we believe this will be it for Julian and he'll go to the NFL, and that's where I am. That's my this isn't scores. It's not pay attention to anything. To me, he just feels like he's going to be a first-round pick. The size, the strength, and I think he's going to put on a show this year. I think him and this offense are going to put on a show. So my hunch is that he's going to go to the National Football League after this year. So I'm working under that premise. If that's the case, then I've got to see those other two quarterbacks. I have to. I've got to see if they can run the full complement of the offense. I have to see if they can be the quarterback of this team next year. And if they can't, then I got to get in the portal. Because I don't think you're turning over a football Ferrari. I mean, you better be ready. You better be ready to handle that job. So it's either going to be a second-year guy, a true freshman, or Tavian St. Clair in year three, which is the ideal situation, is that it would be Tavian. But he's got to be able to handle all of that. And we talked about this last week, that it was apparent that he was kind of being caught for the backup job. Did Ryan give an update on that yesterday, by the way? On the quarterbacks?
Not that I heard.
I believe he did. I believe we have a cut in here where he was asked about it. He has one on the on Luke Fahey, but I swear there was one where he asked about.
So, yeah, backup. He's got one here that's titled, "Has he decided between Tavian St. Clair or Luke Fahey as backup quarterback?"
No, those guys are going to continue to work this week, and so you know we'll continue because we're not into game week yet. So these guys are still competing, and we want another week of work to kind of see how these guys continue to evolve throughout the next 5 days, and we'll go from there. Both have shown bright spots for sure, and we know what's important there, and there'll be times I think even this week where we may even give them a chance with the ones to see what that looks like. But Julian's had a good camp. Julian's been strong, and those guys have a chance to see in the room what it looks like to be a leader, what the expectation is. They're working hard. They're right in the middle of it. School starts tomorrow, so that we're going to change in this routine. But, it's been early mornings and late nights. So, there were some bright spots again out there today for both of those guys.
That's the parallel line. Okay, so, he's just telling you the real truth. The parallel line that Ryan is running, and Mark and everybody in acquisition, general manager, all of it, they're running this season out, right? And they're running it to go win a national championship. And we've said this a long time, and I think that it's the real truth that now in college football is truly a year-to-year proposition. You have a team for this year, and next year the team looks very different. But one of the things that you have got to have buttoned up is quarterback, and you can't be left in the lurch there. So they've recruited well there. I mean, Tavian's a five-star. They've developed Tavian. Is he ready to go as a backup? I.e., is he ready to be the starter next year if Julian goes to the NFL? If you have any doubt about that, if there's any, then Fahey's in the mix, and then potentially you're going to have to go to the portal. Because as everybody knows around here, there's no patience for a rebuild season next year. Rebuilding the offense without Julian and Jeremiah, like there's no time for that, let alone the offensive front. So you're going to have to keep this thing going. And these are the things that they're playing out. So to tie it back into the wide receiver conversation we're having, I think the third and fourth quarters in lopsided games that we don't have as many of them as we usually have, but Ball State, Kent, those type of games, I need to see those two, Fahey, Tavian, I need to see them run the offense. I need to see them spin it and see if they can handle it. And so I think perhaps the approach will be a little different this year in third and fourth quarters of games because he's got to see what he has with those two guys facing live bullets.
Do you really think that, Bo?
I do.
Because
I
remember feeling this with Kyle McCord and we never saw it. So
it's fair. That's fair. That's fair. I also, the one thing I will say about Kyle is there's some revisionist history with that. I think they thought Kyle was going to be really good. And I think Kyle was better than people thought he was the 1 year that he was here. I think there's kind of he wasn't as elite. I mean, he's still in an NFL camp, so it's not like he's some bum. I think he's in Green Bay, fighting for roster spots there. He was a five-star kid and all of that. It just, they thought there was a chance to upgrade that position. It's a fair question. Do I really think Ryan's going to play those quarterbacks and let them rip it? Probably not all the time, but I hope that he does it against Ball State. I hope he does it against Kent State, and I hope he does it against the games that are lopsided. I don't need to see Julian do a lot of things. So my hope is that he gets an idea of what he's got behind Julian for next year, and we'll see. But no, I think it's probably fair to be skeptical of that. Every time that you say, well, I think I've seen it all, Lane Kiffin does something that makes you go, well, that's a new one. More on that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends, right here.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros, the pros who knows.
So I think the casual fan is trying to wrap their heads around what's going on in the NFL college players situation and guys returning from NFL camps, guys being cut, like Daquan Wright was cut by the Browns. He was then entered the transfer portal and is transferring to LSU. He is not the only one. In fact, there's several other players, including some who played last year for Ole Miss, that are trying to play and go play at LSU. And so, of course, Kiffin's at the middle of this. Two things are important to understand on this. Number one, this is because of a Louisiana ruling that is Judge Ronald Johnson is the guy on. This was on Monday, actually. But there's a Louisiana ruling that allowed for anybody. This is the specific part. Anybody who was a 2022 enrollee to have a fifth year. So it's not like a kid who, you know, went to college in 2018 can go back to playing college football, college basketball. This is for 2022 graduates, high school graduates, freshmen in the fall of 2022. This is their fifth year because the NCAA went for five to play five. So that's why this is happening. So there's not going to be this by the thousands, but anybody that is in that class who is not on an NFL roster, who is an undrafted free agent, has the ability to come back. It's way worse in basketball. It's way worse in basketball, and that's an even bigger problem. And LSU, of course, is at the middle of that too because they are the most unscrupulous. Did you see this, by the way, as an aside? Kim Mulkey ran a girl who was playing for her who is from Lithuania, ran her so that she could sign someone from Russia?
Hell yeah, Kim.
Like, my God, LSU.
The LSU.
Like, Will Wade, they got
the amazing
Big East Player of the Year yesterday.
So the yes, go ahead, Reese. He was 2 years ago. Big East Player of the Year at St. John's. He averaged 18 points and went undrafted in 2025, then signed with the Jazz, traded to the Celtics, never played due to injury. Will Wade says, come on home. Come on home. Come back to, it's LSU. It's crazy that LSU is doing this. And I guess you understand why Kiffin went there now, right?
Bo, by the way, Pete Thamel was just dropping this in the last minute or two.
Go ahead.
The Big Ten is set to pass a rule today that does not allow players to return from the NFL and play for a Big Ten school. Anyone who was declared for the NFL draft and did not withdraw, appeared on an NFL roster, or signed a contract with a pro league cannot be on a Big Ten roster.
You better be ready to fight it with litigation.
Why can't the Big Ten? This is what I've talked about, and I love
they
this.
Can as long as everybody rows in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
But if one member institution says we can get better doing this, because the SEC did the same thing yesterday.
They didn't make a rule. They said it.
No, but they said it.
That statement right, by the SEC.
Well, so let's play this out just for the proper understanding of all of this. So Kiffin goes first. He's got an availability yesterday where they ask him about Daquan Wright and recruiting NFL players. Here's what Lane Kiffin said in response to that.
You know, made a decision to recruit some kids around the country. And, you know, through these multiple injunctions around the country, which this is not a first time, they've been in college sports for a while, a group of players were granted a fifth year of eligibility around the country in multiple sports. And through them winning their injunction and entry into the portal, they're available to recruit. And so ourselves, like many places around the country, are recruiting them. And at the end of the day, you know, because of these rulings, they're either going to play for you or they're going to play somewhere else around the country. So we've made a decision to recruit them, like probably most people are.
Well, he's the one that's doing it the most. He was then asked if he's comfortable with NFL players returning to college. Here was Kiffin on that.
Situations are different. Should NFL players come back to college? I believe, and it doesn't matter necessarily what I believe, that answer would be no. I think every circumstance should be looked at differently. This is a very unique circumstance. The judge found that these players should have been told and should have known that they were going to be eligible for a fifth year, which every player moving forward, every athlete moving forward in all sports has. And so they should have known that in December when they were making decisions. Had they known that, they would have stayed. They had no eligibility. So this is not many other circumstances that have been discussed over the years about professionals coming back. They did not know they had a year. Since then, the judge has said, you do have a year. And so because of that, this is a different situation in that where they're just going back to play. They're wanting to go back to play the year that they've been granted.
So as he's describing all of that, and everything he says there, by the way, is accurate. And that's what I was trying to table with the idea of it's a very narrow scope. As he's talking there, guys, you know what jumped out to me? This is going to be a way bigger problem in the NBA and college hoops. How many college basketball players played 1 year and fizzled? You could have guys who played, you know, class of 22 guys who played 1 year, 2 year that claim they have 3 years of eligibility left. And under this ruling, they would they not?
Technically, I mean, yes.
What a massive can of worms that is on the basketball side. Football, it's not quite as bad because, you know, you have to play three. You can't go to the NFL unless you at least play three. So there probably won't be too many of these in football. You mentioned Pete Thamel with the Big Ten ruling. We'll see if it holds up. You just have to kind of all row in the same direction, and then it can. The SEC released a statement, and obviously they want no part of it, but it's a statement versus a ruling. Two very, very different things. Ryan Day was asked about all of this yesterday. Here's what he had to say.
If there are teams that have some players out there who are cut from NFL rosters that are going to be on other teams, we have to at least consider it and look at it. Do I like anything about it? Absolutely not. But we got to do what's right for Ohio State. So it's sort of a day-to-day thing right now. And like anything, we're just going to try to adapt. But I think we would all agree, maybe not everybody, but that, you know, there has to be a certain point where your roster gets locked in. But whenever I heard that we were in a meeting and someone says, yeah, LSU just got a commitment from the Browns tight end, I said, we are certainly in a different world right now.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
But no, Coach Day, you don't have to do it. You can put your foot down and say no. Ohio State's going to be fine if LSU has a couple NFL guys on their roster or someone else. Now, could it cost them a national championship in the end this year or next year? Who knows? But you don't have to do it.
Trying to think. Kurt Cignetti's got a pair of players, and he might be the only one in the Big Ten of consequence that's doing this, where guys on his roster have maybe flirted with the NFL. Because I know the one defensive tackle they just got, he was injured before. He was injured in the Big Ten championship, and I don't think has done much football because he's been rehabbing from that injury. Mm-hmm. But it does, you know, when we heard from Dan Lanning yesterday on it, Ryan Day on it, the Big Ten, obviously, with their ruling, like there's actual ruling here from the Big Ten, the SEC with just a kind of candy-ass statement, just recognizing the issue. It's like, thanks. Thanks, Southeastern Conference. We are also in agreement on it because the SEC is going back to the government well, which, you know, we've all seen how that's played out.
It's not doing anything, yeah. Reese, do you know that the two Indiana guys, had either one of them been in an NFL camp?
So that's what I'm looking at right now.
I think they both had been.
Had they been in camps?
They had been in camps, both of them.
So then is the Big Ten willing to then go to the defending national champions and say those guys are ineligible to play in Big Ten football? That's what, if you're going to put this out, then you got to have Cignetti comply. And I don't know if anybody else in the Big Ten, my hunch is Oregon's snooping around this. This would be up there, right up their alley.
I believe, though, whatever it was, and maybe I missed this yesterday because the NCAA got a stay on that injunction that happened in whatever state. And I believe when that happened, whatever state it was that the Indiana players had petitioned, they were as of then ineligible. Now, I don't know if that's changed or not, or if it's going to, but because this was all different by states.
It's all, and this goes right. And this goes to what we've been saying only forever, mm-hmm. that because they failed on every single level, this is all, they're at the mercy of these independent states. Like this judge in Louisiana, Judge Ronald Johnson in Louisiana, who granted the St. John's player an injunction to play this season at LSU. What are we doing? But you can't possibly, this is why, yeah, the Big Ten can put this ruling out that Thamel is reporting right now on NFL players. Are you going to apply it to NBA players too? I mean, I had Austin Ward on yesterday, and he was talking about Ohio State maybe thinking there was a guy who was on the roster last year that could come back and help the Buckeyes this year, or signing an Argentinian player who has played professionally. Like, where does this all end?
And you know what? Sorry, you're not allowed. Like, if that's what the Big Ten does, see you later. And this is a bigger problem in basketball, you mentioned, Bo, because people have been playing professionally overseas and then coming over and playing college basketball. But I guess you just need to put your foot down like you did with Sorsby and say enough is enough. This goes back to my thing when the NCAA did this 5-for-5 or 5-in-5. Yeah. Why did they change the first number to 5? Why didn't they just leave it 4? You get 4 and 5 and you're on your way.
All right, let me, we need to take a quick time out. I'm going to take a look at this Thamel reporting on what the Big Ten is trying to do and see if this will hold up. Is it just a football thing, a basketball thing? We'll have more on this coming up shortly. Bishop and Friends are here on the
ESPN senior NFL insider Adam Schefter joins Rothman and Ice every Wednesday at 12:30. And he works blue.
Okay.
The NFL Playbook with Adam Schefter is sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
Indeed it is. The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. What's the weather outside? Who cares? Bakers and shorts. This is Bishop and Friends.
Hey, fellas, when it comes time to making a big decision, like the ring, you don't wing it. That's why I trust my friends at Diamond Seller. Nearly 8 decades, their families help generations of couples celebrate life's biggest moments. Exceptional quality, larger diamonds, better value. It's that simple. And guys, here's the best part. They walk you through it. So step by step, you know what you're going to get, and you're going to get it right. Whether you're ready to propose or ready to upgrade, visit Diamond Seller, 2 locations, Sawmill Road, Easton Town Center, or learn more at DiamondSeller.com. I was looking at this Pete Thamel report that happened right in the middle of our last segment. And his report, I'll just read it verbatim. The Big Ten is set to pass a rule today that doesn't allow players to return to the NFL and play for a Big Ten school. Anyone who has declared for the NFL draft and did not withdraw, appeared on an NFL roster, or signed a contract with a pro league cannot be on a Big Ten roster. What is missing from this that will help them avoid litigation? The word NBA? I guess it's not a word.
Yeah, that
I mean, appeared, isn't that a problem?
It's so, certainly NHL maybe too. I don't, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. NHL, NBA especially. NHL, good job with you. You're right. NHL a little bit too, but definitely NBA in professional basketball.
I would have to say you might want to extend that to G League, NBA. Like, you will have to, and this is going to take lawyers much smarter than I, those billable hours still undefeated. We're going to have to list almost every single professional basketball league in the world.
That's right.
If you are serious about this, and that would affect Ohio State.
Yes, and so if you're going to apply this to football, and Bake, you're right, if they all just comply, then you don't have a problem. But if you're going to apply this to football, then you have to apply it to everything. This has to be applied to basketball. You can't have guys playing professionally and then come in and playing college basketball. And then you have to say, well, if we're going to play by these rules and nobody else is that a smart way to go about our business? Like, the first comment after the Thamel post from some clown on the X platform, Big Ten conference officials love hurting themselves. If the SEC doesn't make this a rule, why would you? You're putting yourself at a competitive disadvantage. It's the very first comment. And you're right, Bake. In Buckeye football, it's not going to kill them if they don't take guys who aren't good enough to make NFL rosters. Like, it's not going to kill Ohio State football. But if you start applying this to basketball, you have to have the same rule in that sport. Otherwise, you're up for litigation before you even start applying the rule. And it has to apply to both. You can't just pick the sport it applies to. This is why they keep getting in trouble with all this stuff. There's no rule that they can put in place that truly works for all of it. It's all going to lose in court every time they do any of this stuff. You need one circuit judge in some state to make a ruling, and then you get a stay, and you can't fight it for 8 months, and so nothing changes. So if you're going to apply this to football, it has to apply to basketball too. Otherwise, you're setting yourself up for litigation.
Well, I heard somebody talking about this the other day. I can't remember who it was, but how can these guys enter the transfer portal if they're not enrolled at a school? You have to be enrolled at a university to be in the transfer portal?
We did this. That's an offshoot of when Carson Beck said he hasn't gone to school in years. And we said, don't you have to be in school to represent a school? Don't you have to be a full-time student? Even if it's grad school? Like, don't you have... I mean, I don't know. I'm asking.
I mean, Lenora Sellers admitted to just doing an internship at a golf course.
Yeah, and look, they do a lot with that summer semester, right? You know, used to go home in the summer. Like, they'll act like they load up in the summer and the spring and go light course load in the fall. They've been doing that for 20 years. But this is a little bit different. Like, yeah, you're right. Like, in order to be in the transfer portal, you'd think you'd have to be a student. Yeah. But I would also say if you're going to play in the national championship, you should have to be a student. I don't know if Carson Beck was a student at the University of Miami. I know he represented the school. I know he has a degree. But was he an active student? How many classes do you have to take to be an active student?
And is that different for a graduate student? Like,
right.
How many classes? I guess that's something we'd have to look up with the NCAA. I'm sure there's some minimum amount of classes, even if you've already graduated, you have to be taking. But
imagine like that conversation at UMiami. Like, listen, Carson's got a degree. We're gonna have him for 2 years. We got to come up with some sort of grad program that minimum amount of classes that we can keep him in. How many do we need? Two. Can we get him two classes a year? That'll do it. Like, what's the minimum threshold that you have to be able to have to be eligible to play collegiately? The reality of this is they actually showed this summer with Brendan Sorsby that if they all band together for the good of it, they can prevent stuff. But they're all too damn self-serving and greedy to actually do it. But it's there. They have a blueprint. I mean, remember, the judge ruled in Sorsby's favor. Ruled in Texas Tech's favor. It was the conference that said, yeah, we're not having it. It was other conferences that said, yeah, we're not going to play him. And that was because he bet on games. This is eligibility stuff. They could all band together and actually do this. All it would take is just Sankey calling the athletic director at LSU and just saying, hey, man, we're not having this. And if LSU couldn't do it and Ole Miss, then if you just got them all to row in the same direction at the power two level, then what's left? Like, what impact would some of these guys have if they sign with Georgia Tech? These guys are a difference maker because they're difference makers who are going to contending teams. The difference between LSU a week ago in LSU now, they're better. They bring back an all-SEC guy from last year at Ole Miss. I mean, I saw firsthand the guy who was with the Browns, the tight end.
Pretty good.
He's an impressive human. Like, he's going to help them. They're better. And so if you're playing them in the playoff and they have 5-6 guys who were in the NFL draft, that's a big differentiator. You put those 5 or 6 guys, you spread them around to the ACC and Big 12 teams, it's probably a little bit different. So the Big Ten and the SEC are going to have to lead on this, and they're going to have to row in the same direction. The Big Ten tried. We'll see if it holds water, and we'll see if it applies to the NBA and EuroLeague and everything else. Those are the questions that they're going to be pressed with. We'll hit the real truth of the second hour coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The Buckeyes are ranked number one, so let's talk about them. Endless Buckeye conversation awaits you on your home for Ohio State athletics. The Fan.
Hey, what's up? It's T-Bone.
Today started with T-Bone and Tybus weekday mornings from 6 to 9 here on The Fan. You'd think that a radio lifer and a national title winner wouldn't have much in common, but you'd be wrong.
They're both girthy. They both love football, and they both get racially profiled for completely different reasons. It's like driving to work with your friends, except these friends give away tickets to things and talk to all the important people in town. Your actual friends are probably a bunch of losers. Well, anyway, listen to T-Bone and Tybus live on the Fan app, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Every year.
Testing live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reese, sir. Ohio State football's back in 12 days. The top-ranked Buckeyes will host the Ball State Cardinals Saturday, September 5th. It'll be a 12:30 kickoff with Senior Day festivities to start off the 2026 season. Week zero begins Saturday in Dublin, Ireland. North Carolina battles TCU at noon. The NFL preseason wraps up this week. Browns host the Patriots Thursday at 8 o'clock. Dylan Gabriel's going to get the start there. Deshaun Watson was named QB1 on Monday. Watson won't see any more preseason action, but will start for Cleveland week one in Jacksonville. Bengals look for a perfect preseason Friday night against the Eagles in Philadelphia. In baseball Monday, the Guardians push their win streak to 6 with a 4-2 win over the Angels in Anaheim. Cleveland's only 2.5 back of the AL Central. As for Cincinnati, Reds drop their second straight, a 5-0 shutout by the Giants in San Francisco. This update is sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com to make your reservation today. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, before we get to the real truth, it looks like the SEC, according to Ross Dellinger, is trying to do something as well, Bake. Did you see this?
Yeah, so he basically said that they're about to release a statement to their schools and ADs to not accept former pro players, and that this is under the threat of penalty, whether it be fine, okay, suspension, forfeiture of games, something like that. Somebody said this is Greg Sankey's Brennan Sorsby moment here.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to need to be. We'll see if he's got the juice for it and see if LSU, it's really one school. He just needs LSU to comply. You know, that's it. Like,
well, you don't need them to. You can just, if they use those guys, it's an eligible player, and they forfeit the game.
Yeah, and then you have to be able to stand up to the litigation that LSU would have on that. So the SEC would just have to be able to withstand that. And LSU's got very deep pockets right now, thanks to all the Raising Cane's you guys all eat, in large part. Let's hit the real truth. Go ahead, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present The Real Truth.
Sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years.
Chris Henry Jr. and Brock Boyd will have more receiving yards at Ohio State this season than Quincy Porter and Mylon Graham will have at Notre Dame. Is that the real truth?
I think it's going to be close, but I don't think it will be the real truth, because neither Chris Henry nor Brock Boyd is going to be the number one option at Ohio State. It's possible that one of them ends up being the number two by the time we get to the midway point and back part of the season. But at the beginning of the season, there's just a little too much depth, and I think obviously the Jeremiah part of it, and then Brandon's going to get a lot of touches too. So I think it's just going to be about opportunity, whereas at Notre Dame, it feels to me like Porter and Graham are going to be near the top of the intended target list. So I don't think it's the real truth, but the reason I wanted to talk about this was I do think that the buzz, and we didn't get a chance to play it, but we can play it later in the week, the buzz around Brock Boyd appears to be very, very real, and Chris Henry as well. It was a lot of Devin McCune conversation when the practices that we were at, and Bake, you were on this with Henry, like, I'll believe that when I see it. It looks like those two guys are going to have a big, big impact. I just don't know if they'll get enough targets to match what Porter and Graham will do at Notre Dame.
So combined, I don't believe this is the real truth, but I do think Chris Henry Jr. has more than either Mylon Graham or Quincy Porter. I think Quincy Porter will probably be pretty good at Notre Dame, and he'll probably have a pretty big year this year and end up being their number one wide receiver.
Yeah.
I don't know how Mylon Graham is going to do there, but I think Quincy Porter will probably be pretty good if he can stay healthy. Mm-hmm. But I think Chris Henry Jr. is going to be the unquestioned number two on this Ohio State team, and the fact that he never comes off the field. You may see Devin McCune come in, but I think it'll be for Brandon Ennis. I don't think it'll be at the expense of Chris Henry Jr., especially as the year goes on. But I think Chris Henry Jr. has a better year than either of those two individually. But combined, I don't see Ohio State really playing more than three wide receivers, quite frankly, because they haven't in the past however many handful of years. So I just don't know how much production Brock Boyd's going to have as a true freshman.
So let's stay on the Henry thing for a second. What would be, like, if he ends up being wide receiver two, if that's the way that this inevitably plays out, that he ends up being wide receiver two, that would be the spot that Carnell Tate was in last year. Carnell Tate last year at Ohio State, pulling it up, getting it there. That's a lot to expect, first round pick. Carnell Tate last year at Ohio State was 51 for 875.
And missed a couple games.
He did. I mean, he ended up missing like a month is what it ended up being, I think, right? Is that what it kind of ended up by the time we were done with it? Let's see. Let me pull up his game log. All right. He was there. He basically missed the entire month of November. He played against Penn State, and he didn't play again until the Michigan game. So he missed three games and 51 for 875. So to me, 51 for 875 playing every game would be a monster first year for Chris Henry. That's a big year for a freshman. So, but that's probably what it's going to take just from an opportunity standpoint. And so then the question is, do you think Quincy Porter can have 1,000 yards at Notre Dame? Do you think he'll end up being their number one? That's really what it'll come down to if you have that conversation.
And he may be, but they have three or four pretty good wide receivers over there. Like, Jaden Greathouse is not in their R lads as a starter, but he's an experienced receiver and really good. And I could see Notre Dame playing four, five, six receivers a lot more than Ohio State does.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Be interesting to track this one.
But one other thing for Chris Henry Jr. too, and again, I don't know how this is all going to play out, and I think Ohio State really likes their tight ends. They don't have a Max Clair, though. They don't have 43 and 450 yards coming from the tight end spot this year.
No, that's true.
We'll go from the wide receiver spot to the running back spot. A little edit on the fly. Only one Ohio State running back will eclipse 1,000 yards rushing this season. Is that the real truth?
Yes. Yes, that is the real truth. I think what would also be an interesting way to phrase this, and I almost think, like, when it comes with statistics like this, we should look at a 12 game, because if you go 17, then it's, I remember Eddie being kind of a little salty with Zeke breaking his record for single game, single season rushing. He's like, man, the guy played 15 games. Like, what are you talking about? So I think, like, we almost have to do like a games thing. I think what would be interesting is, if you ask the question, will any Ohio State running back have 1,000 yards through the Michigan game? I still think it's yes. I think Bo Jackson will have 1,000, but I am curious to see how they kind of split up and divvy up those carries.
I like the way you just worded that, Bo. And I don't think that's the case, because I think this is going to be a true timeshare in the backfield. And I think you're going to have probably Bo Jackson through the Michigan game. I think you're going to have Bo Jackson and Isaiah West both like in the 700 to 900 yard range, because I think they're going to use them both that equally.
Could be.
All right, let's do a little bit of hockey here since Bakes back in the saddle. Adam Fantilli will go into Blue Jackets training camp without a contract extension. Is that the real truth?
I mean, I'll lean on Bake on this, but my hunch is yes, it hasn't happened. It's August 25th. You know, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what the offseason's. I don't know what they're doing this offseason. I can't make sense of it.
I don't understand why he's not signed. Like, I don't understand once Carlson and Bedard got done. I don't get what you're waiting for. I saw Cutter Gauthier, who scored 40 goals, turn down a possible $13, $14 million a year contract with Anaheim. Well, I feel like this has got to be term, Bo. I think the Blue Jackets want Adam Fantilli. Yes, I think the Blue Jackets want to sign Adam Fantilli for an 8-year deal, because this is the last year you can do that. Mm-hmm. And I think Fantilli's camp doesn't want to do that. I think they want maybe 4 or 5 years, like Carlson and Bedard both did. This has got to be term. The Blue Jackets have to think there's no way somebody's coming with an offer sheet. And I don't get why this is done. I heard Porty on with Dylan Tyer and Tim May. on Saturday, and he said he thinks once the calendar turns to September and training camp's right around the corner, that maybe there's going to be more urgency to get this done. I'm going to say Fantilli does get signed before training camp, but it's going to go right up to it.
You don't... you're probably right.
I don't get it, though, Bo. It makes no sense why he's not signed.
I mean, guys, what sense do we make of this offseason for them?
Not much sense, but it's been bad.
Yeah,
we're just going to put a word on it.
This has not been good. There's no reason to go into... I mean, when do they go into camp? It's end of September?
I think it's September 16th.
Okay, middle of September. We're a month, less than a month from them starting camp. You know, like, as they go into camp, why do you have any belief that they will be better than they were a year ago? Like, what would make you believe they're anything other than chasing the eight, which is kind of where they've been?
You got to believe, I guess, that Adam Fantilli takes another step, that Kent Johnson and Dmitry Voronkov rebound, that Valerie Nichushkin is that much better than Mason Marchman.
But there's nothing that there was nothing that was done this summer.
Yes, you're right. Correct.
To lead you to go, oh, they're serious. There just was nothing there that happened. You know, summer came and went. It was mostly bad news. And yeah, I mean, you could, our guys are going to get better. Well, okay. Well, you're not building towards... There's nothing here that leads you to believe, like, in the next 3 to 5 years, this is a Stanley Cup contender. So, what are we doing?
I'm going to put you guys on the spot here as the NFL is unveiling each team their rivalries uniforms.
Okay.
Alternate uniforms in the NFL should only be throwbacks. Is that the real truth?
I don't know that it's all the way the real truth, but I just looked at this Detroit one, and they look like the Carolina Panthers. I mean, they have a blue helmet that's like a really bright blue. Like, this is the only one that I've seen so far.
Bears look like Illinois.
Okay, so the Detroit Lions one looks like... They look just like the Carolina Panthers home game. Home uniforms is what they look like to me. They got a black stripe. They've got a bright blue with like a black... I think the Lions black. It just looks like Carolina's... You know, I'm sure it's not black. I'm sure it's like gunmetal or some nonsense. But like, it's might as well be... Detroit looks like the Carolina Panthers. What do the Bears have? Oh, geez.
So kind of blue, like...
Orange helmets.
Weird blue, orange helmet, orange pant.
What do the Vikings do?
The Jaguars look awful.
Jaguars have the teal helmet.
Oh, my God.
The Jaguars look bad.
Awful. It's like a soft gold. It's like a soft gold. Tennessee is like a... What in the hell is Tennessee? Well, they brought back the Navy, I guess.
Maybe I don't
they
mind should've... Tennessee's.
Well, the one that I'm curious about is Houston. I'm pulling Houston's up right now. Oh, so they did get to use the... So Houston's is kind of an Oilers. This will be their most popular uniform. It's an all-white one, but it does have the H-Town blue in it. So that one...
I can get with Green Bay. Green Bay looks pretty nice.
Look at Jacksonville.
That's brutal.
Oh, my God. I didn't see the Ravens yet. What did the Ravens do? What are we doing?
Too much.
Too much, man.
Reese, to answer your question,
Judas Priest.
I don't think that's the real truth because eventually you've got to get other cool jerseys and some of them hit. Like I said, I think Green Bay's is pretty good here, but
it feels like more misses than hits on all of these. If you're going to give me every single year 32 teams are going to do alternates in some form or fashion, 30 of those are going to be bad.
So I think Houston's is going to be the most... Green Bay's is pretty good. The Lions is terrible. Jacksonville's is terrible. Minnesota, those all are great uniforms. If you don't look like the team you're supposed to be, like if you're not easily identified, then I have a hard time helping you. All right, let me see. I haven't seen Ravens.
And so many of them have a long explanation as to what they're going for. And I don't know if NFL teams realize just the attention span of the fan base in general is not that long to read your 3-paragraph explainer.
Gosh, the Jacksonville.
So I don't see the Ravens one.
Is so bad.
It all reeks of TLDR, bro.
Okay. Yeah. I don't see a Baltimore one. I think I've seen everybody else. The Vikings one is a disaster. Oof. Not great. Not great. Speaking of not great, an NFL owner did what? And he did it where? We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Where can you listen to the number one ranked Ohio State Buckeyes? On Columbus's number one station. Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan.
Football.
The Reds are on The Fan's family of stations all season long. If you don't listen, Terry Francona will ride his scooter to your house and yell at you. Your home of the Reds. The Fan. The Fan 2 and The Fan 3. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We've had a good day of weather so far, and that'll continue for the rest of your Tuesday. Mostly sunny skies, just those passing fair weather clouds this afternoon. Highs in the upper 70s. Partly cloudy skies overnight, lows in the upper 50s. Still partly cloudy for your Wednesday, just a touch warmer with highs pretty close to 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And homes in Columbus know that August brings those aggressive yellow jackets and wasps. They're everywhere. Don't wait for invasion. Protect your property and your family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection, one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, and trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. I think sometimes it's best to just read something straight. So this happened yesterday. This was first reported by WKBN out of Youngstown. The reporting is as follows. San Francisco 49ers owner Jed York arrested in the Valley over the weekend and found guilty of two misdemeanor charges after court documents state that he responded to an undercover law enforcement advertisement on a prostitution website. York was arrested Sunday in East Palestine and posted $5,000 bond. An affidavit states York responded to an ad on a known prostitution website unbeknownst to him, was posted by an agent with the Mahoning Valley Human Trafficking Task Force. The document states that York arranged to have sexual activity with a woman in exchange for $140. He arrived at a set location with the phone he used to arrange a meeting, was taken into custody. The police report lists the time and location of the arrest at 9:35 in the morning, and then they give the address for the mobile park where it happened. York pleaded no contest Monday morning to misdemeanor charge of disorderly conduct and possessing criminal tools. Records state he was originally charged with engaging in prostitution, but it was amended to disorderly conduct as part of a plea agreement. I bet they came to that pretty quickly. Arrested Sunday morning, plea agreement by Monday, out with misdemeanors. WKBN reached out to the NFL requesting comment on York's arrest, received the following statement. We are aware of the matter, which will be reviewed under the personal conduct policy. 49ers also commented saying that this is a legal matter which has been resolved. We will not be providing any further comment at this time. Where do you want to start with the questions on this? So, number one, if you're curious, Jed York's net worth individually is around $500 million. His family wealth is $8.5 billion. This is all part of the DeBartolo family that bought the Niners back in 1977 for $17 million. He's been the president since 2008. He's been the CEO since 2010 and the principal owner since 2024 of the San Francisco 49ers. So, I guess among the questions I would have is, I guess we'd all just start with a pretty simple one, which is why? Why, if this is the itch that you're trying to scratch, what are you doing?
I mean, it's the same thing with Robert Kraft, right?
Where it's you're going not quite though, Reese,
to a
because
parlor.
It's not quite though that, because that is, I think it is. Is it understood that there are those type of places where that type of activity happens, and Kraft kind of got in the middle of it, but that isn't quite going to East Palestine, Ohio to a trailer park and answering an ad for $140. Like, Kraft was probably going to something that moonlights as one thing, but is actually something else, which I think is quite common around this country. I mean, it's a masseuse parlor, right? That Kraft went to?
Yes.
Wasn't a massage, right? Okay. This is a billionaire NFL owner. And by the way, the Kraft thing is probably behavior that's happened a bunch with people in that area. I mean, probably what, for, you know, in terms of a business, that's one thing and advertising the other. This is answering something on your phone, agreeing to $150, then going to a trailer park in East Palestine, Ohio, and getting caught.
So you,
what are we doing?
York, a Cardinal Mooney grad.
Yeah.
So from that area.
It's a drive, though. I mean, it's every bit of 30 minutes from Youngstown to East Palestine.
But I guess I say that to say that he's probably familiar with things like that in that area.
Correct.
I would agree. But also,
so to him,
all the more reason, Reese,
not like, going out of his way.
Have that come to you.
So I think we're trying to apply logic to this. Well, as three people who have never engaged in this and would never engage in this, how had the how, the why is something that we can't, it defies our logic and probably the logic of all of our listeners, but not a billionaire who it feels like engages in this regularly.
Probably, but like
either way, he would have been busted, right? Because it was a sting operation.
And he would have been busted if he's using his personal phone. Like, why does he not have, like, an Ask Jeeves guy
you gotta have
to
number
set
two
this thing
phone.
Up?
You got to have a number two phone.
Yes.
Again, these
why
are
is
good,
he
these
himself
are good
going,
questions.
Like, where's the in-between layer?
The first question I had in all this, and you're never going to get it answered, is, okay, this is the time he got caught. How often does this happen?
Good night.
And I don't think he's on his own here. Like, I just assume in my life that all uber rich and all uber powerful people are into conduct like this. I just assume that all of them got there somehow, and this is how they got there. Like, I just assume all of them are involved in this stuff.
I don't know. I'm with you on some of it. I don't know if this is how they got there. I think that when you get to a point where you're so rarely ever told no, that it seems like some of these guys look for that extra level of, they just keep chasing another type of thrill and another type of accommodation is what it seems like. And whether it's, you know, something, you know, like the craft thing or this thing, obviously from the very, very highest level of this would be like the Epstein stuff that has been in the news for 3-4 years now. And the names that are on that, you know, I mean, Diddy, like all of this stuff, like there's been a bunch of this stuff around sex trafficking, which is just a massive, horrific problem. And this is part of it. It's just the failure of intelligence test for York here. I mean, this to me would just be so easy to avoid this ever happening to you. There should be layers between you and this type of behavior. If you're the owner of the San Francisco 49ers. Layers.
Reese, you talked about he's probably pretty familiar with this scene up in that area. I wonder, like, because everybody's like, well, why would you get $140 from a trailer park? Aren't there, like, higher class girls and this and that? I don't know if there are in that part of the state of Ohio, so.
I did want to know what counts as a criminal tool. And so from the Ohio Revised Code, which is one of the charges that he pled down to, a criminal tool per the Ohio Revised Code can also can be a cell phone used to text threats or arrange illegal acts, or flashlights used during a burglary. Also lockpicking sets, crowbars, bomb making materials. Because when I read the initial thing where it says he pled down to possession of criminal tools, I'm thinking of like a lockpicking set that somebody rolls out and just has their weapons ready. Not, a, I mean, a cell
like
phone.
One of those satchels?
Yeah.
And they just, like, lock pick.
Right, they're ready to pick
like
a lock.
Like MacGyver?
Exactly.
It's like Ocean's 11, and they're picking the safe.
What a mess. What an absolute mess. Also, I think the other thing that, the other question I would have on this, and it'd be great to just have, like, all of this on camera, but, like, the arresting officer, when did they realize who they arrested? Then once you get Jed York into lockup, how quickly is a call made and who took the call that said, we got to get this resolved promptly. We need to plead down to misdemeanors now. Like, how did that go?
I'm sure
how high up
lawyer.
In East Palestine, Ohio, did that go? Yeah. Like, is that the mayor? Like, who gets that call? Like, we got to get this sorted out in about 30 seconds.
Sure, his lawyer's on retainer taking care of all of that real fast.
Like, can you imagine being the arresting officer?
East Palestine PD, sir. All right, you know who I am? No, sir, get in the car.
Do you think he drove his? Do you think he drove his Bentley, or did he have like a Honda Accord on the side that he rolled up?
Rolled up. And, what a debacle. Unmitigated. But it'll go away because, you know, that can happen. And it probably will in this case. The PGA Tour is trying something new, and Bake was off yesterday, so we'll give him a chance to weigh in on what the Browns did at the quarterback position. We'll do that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
They've all been paid by the Cleveland Browns. This is Bishop and Friends.
And speaking of the Cleveland Browns, yesterday, as soon as we got off the air, now we knew that it would be Deshaun Watson. That happened while we were on the air yesterday, and we weighed in on that yesterday. But then after our show, Todd Monken had an availability up in Cleveland where he named Deshaun Watson the starting quarterback and talked about how he went into the decision. One of the logical questions that was asked is, what did we all miss in this quarterback decision? Todd Monken answered that question yesterday.
Well, again, it's the day-to-day. What they're not seeing is the film. They're not in our building. They're not going to know what we know. You can see with your own eyes, right? You can forecast what you expect it to be, right? A number of those people weren't even in practice. So I don't really concern myself with what they really think. I know what we think and what we see every day and on our building and our players and the momentum we have, and we're 100% behind Deshaun.
Deshaun Watson had what could best be described as a pretty tough media outing on Saturday, and he was available yesterday. Reese, we talked about this. Like I said, if it were me, I'd put him out there. I'd put him out there tomorrow and rip the Band-Aid off and go. They did. Watson was available yesterday. Here were his comments about being named the starter.
It's great. You know, this is what I've been working for 2 years, is to be able to show that, you know, I'm capable of being a starter for one of the 32 organizations in this league. Today was a assignment I had no idea until I walked into the building. And I talked with Coach Monk. It felt good, you know, and a lot of excitement. But it comes with a lot of work, too. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of challenges that I have to continue to overcome. And I just got to continue to work on achieving those victories each and every day. So I'm ready and prepared. You know, there's going to be a lot of ups and downs. But at the same time, you know, I'm excited to be, you know, a starting quarterback in this league, and especially a starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
He did, in that availability, also apologize and clarify his comments post-game Saturday. The one thing that I've said on this was, and I sometimes it's just sometimes the easiest, the simplest is just the truth of it. Todd Monken is going to put the best guys out there at every position that give him a chance to win. He has no agenda with any player on the roster. He has the agenda of a 60-year-old man who probably would acknowledge that this is his one and only chance of being an NFL head coach. And he's either going to coach the Cleveland Browns for a long time, they're going to have a bunch of success and transition this roster from what it was to a younger version of it and continue to build it, and he's going to be in the center of it, or it's not going to go well, and he's going to be out and probably won't get another chance of being a head coach. And so when you factor all of those things in, the only thing Todd Monken is worried about is winning football games, and whoever he picked to be the starting quarterback is who he believes gives them the best chance to win. I think it's as simple as that. Bake, you were off yesterday when we discussed all of this, everything that happened Saturday, and then this decision. Obviously a lifelong Browns fan. What did you make of all of this?
I've totally flipped on all of this with Watson and Sanders, and I think there's a little more to this than just on the field play. Deshaun Watson, I hated his comments, Bo, and I understand you said he was just saying he didn't want to talk about Houston anymore, but I hated his comments saying that he wasn't and couldn't be the player he was in Houston anymore. And mm-hmm. then he says what he said the other day, and he's obviously holding a grudge towards the Cleveland fans because they booed him when he went off the field with his Achilles injury. And Deshaun Watson never wanted to be in Cleveland. He wanted to go to the Falcons. I know the Saints were bidding on him and a couple other teams too. And he didn't say, yeah, I'm going to go to Cleveland, until the Browns offered him an unprecedented, fully guaranteed contract. Now, maybe somebody else would have done that too. But once the Browns did that, and that had never been done before, he's like, okay, I'll come to Cleveland. He also, to me, this is this close, like, I just don't understand the point in starting him. And If he doesn't want to be there, how can he rally the guys around him to play better? So I've totally switched on this, and I was getting on the verge of this Browns roster, if they get competent quarterback play, could be a team that played meaningful games towards the end of the year and be right there fighting possibly for a playoff spot. I think this is another 3-14 year for the Browns, because I don't think either of these guys are good enough at that position, and I just don't see Watson rallying this team.
So, to that point, the one thing that I would say is that NFL teams, college teams are, I mean, quite honestly, they're like all of us. They're pretty siloed. They're pretty siloed. And one thing that I have seen firsthand is the genuine affection and belief that Browns players have for Deshaun Watson. That I've seen that firsthand, and his leadership and all of those things. So, and I think that all changed with the hiring of Monk. I mean, that's what changed all of that. Like, it would have gone a very different way, I think, if there was no coaching change. There was. And so with Monk, they got a free, everybody got a clean slate, and they got to prove what they're capable of. The only thing that I do think, and I said this many times, to me, if it was close, then Shadur just makes all the sense organizationally. He's a fifth round pick. He's under team control. If Watson, take aside the personal stuff with him for a second, like just, or whatever you think of him, just think of him as a contract. If Watson plays well, you're going to have to figure out if you would want to bring him back. And then if that's the case, you'd have to figure out what the market is for him, and then you'd have to pay him the market value of that. So if he's 80% of what he was in Houston, which I'm sure most Browns fans would sign up for that production, if he is that, then you have to find a way to say, well, do we want to now commit three more years to a 30-year-old quarterback who's 80% of what he was in Houston, and that might be good enough for us to be in contention in the division because of everything else we've done. If it's Shadur, you don't have to worry about any of that. If Shadur is 80% of what Deshaun Watson was in Cleveland from a production standpoint, if it's that similar, then you might not even have to draft a quarterback next year. And now in a position-rich draft, you might be able to really buoy the roster from a talent standpoint. So I always contended if it was close, it would be Shadur. Like, that's what I would do, just me personally, that I would do Shadur, because it, to me, that just from an organization makes all the sense in the world. So this decision would lead me to connect dots and say that maybe it wasn't quite as close.
But that's not what they're saying.
That's not what Todd's saying. I agree. And I've always been one. Ask Todd a question, get an answer. There is some human analytics at play here, perhaps, with trying to make sure that everybody's engaged. Look, it's tough. This is a tough one. This is a decision that Todd Monken made that is one that is, it's has not landed well, obviously, with the fan base and obviously around the National Football League. The one good thing they have going for them is they have 3 weeks before they play a game. You're going to have 2 full weeks of college football before you play a game. And then you're going to get into week 1 of the regular season. And then this is just going to inevitably come down to how well does Deshaun Watson play? How well does he play down in Jacksonville in that opener? How well does he play? You want to talk about games that are going to be interesting. Guys, they get Tampa week 2. You're aware who the quarterback at Tampa is. That's week 2.
Thank God that's not in Cleveland.
So that's where I'm at, because if they don't come back 2-0, it's going to be messy for the starting quarterback to run out onto the field, even if they're 1-1. But if they're 0-2, it's as vitriolic maybe as there's been at Huntington Bank Field or whatever they want to call it now. I also want to push back. Watson didn't apologize yesterday. He just acknowledged that he pissed people off. I think there was acknowledgement that what he said angered people. And I think there was an acknowledgement that that was done. I don't necessarily, and he said he took responsibility, but of course you do. Those are your words, man. Like, you have to. So I'm not going to give him any credit for going out there and just acknowledging what was the obvious. Yeah. He's got to play out of his mind, and they've got to come back 2-0 against what would it be, the Carolina Panthers week 3. Anything else is a disaster. I don't know if there's, and this would have to be a Todd Monken question of what the, and you can't ask him this because I'm not sure he'd give you even an answer of what's the length of rope you give for Deshaun before you're yanking him and putting Shadur Sanders out there.
He kind of answered that a little bit. I mean, they asked, like, is this week to week? And he said no.
I also thought it was weird, given the situation, that one of the first things that came out of Todd's mouth when asked about it was on the road.
He knew. I mean, he knows. He's smart enough to know what this is.
So actually, Todd's post-game Saturday is how they should have... That's really what everybody... Like, what Todd said Saturday after post-game was like, is it fun being booed? No, it's not. We got to play better, and then that won't happen. And that's probably what Deshaun said. Should have said Saturday. It's not fun being booed. I hated being booed. These guys booed me when I did this, and obviously that's a sore spot for him. Get it from his perspective. But to say what he said, and then you're going to try to... That's what makes it tough. Is all you really have to say is, yeah, it sucks to be booed. I got to play better. Even if you don't believe it, if you just say that, then you don't have everything that happened post game and everything that happened yesterday. So that's that humanalytics word that Rothman came up with, which is so brilliant. There's just ways to handle things that keep things from blowing up and boiling over, and they could have been avoided.
I am actually kind of happy, though, that this has all happened the past week and a half or so, because I was starting to not feel good about this season for the Browns, but I was like, well, maybe they're not going to be a bottom five team in the National Football League this year. And now I have no expectations again. So nothing is going to hurt me or disappoint me this year as a Browns fan. And I'm back.
Don't say that before a game's big play, babe. They can still hurt us.
Back to being normal. And will I watch? Yeah, but I'll also be paying attention to Red Zone and seeing how all of my other guys are doing. And they're scoring touchdowns. And I have no hope for this Cleveland Browns season now.
And the only way that they're going to get the hope back, and I'm guessing your view is similar to a lot, you know, the only way they get that back is by winning. If they win and prove people wrong, then people will get lured back in. So it's up to them to do it on the field. We'll do a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Only there was a radio show that constantly talked about Ohio State athletics. Well, good news. It's real, baby. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
Proud to be your flagship home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. Ohio's sports destination.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Tuesday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
Speaking on the Assorted Crackers podcast, Walker Jones, executive director of the Grove Collective at Ole Miss, revealed the chaos in Oxford after Lane Kiffin took the LSU job.
A lot of sleepless nights. As a matter of fact, I spent several nights sleeping at the Manning Center, and we worked 24/7 to keep our roster and to keep the program going. And what people don't realize, too, is half the staff was going to LSU.
Right.
So we literally had to have two different text threads, two different staff meetings. We had to ask coaches to leave the room. We had to no hall room conversations, nothing written down, nothing written on the grease boards in the office. Because half the staff was literally, we were going to be competing against.
It's like espionage spy games.
Well, and we actually had the FBI come through and walk the building for bugs and for everything.
Because, really?
Yeah, we knew kind of what was in Baton Rouge. And
wow.
We knew
how they
were. We operated. So literally, I remember getting on my knees and looking underneath the desk, like checking for, like, is there some sort of bug in my office? Somebody was like, what are you doing? I'm like, you just trust me. You don't know this guy like I do.
Yeah. So, well, thing or not a thing.
That last line is so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, you don't know this guy like I do. So, look, the devil's fun was on your side, I guess, is the way that I would read that. They know everything Kiffin was capable of, and we're happy with it because he won, and LSU is willing to take all that comes with it because he wins. And now he's just at a place where he actually has pressure to win for the first time since he was probably at USC. There's legitimate pressure to win at LSU with all of the things that they're doing. None of this is really surprising to me. But one other thing on this, none of this is Lane Kiffin's fault either. It's not his fault. It's the calendar's fault. The calendar made this happen. He didn't have to take the LSU job. But just ask yourself the question. If you are in a position at a place and some place that is superior to where you work offers you more money doing the same job, would you take it? Or would you stay because of loyalty? Ask that question. And I think many of you probably would go the way of Kiffin. There might be some of you that would stay and say, I'm going to see this thing all the way through, and there's a ceiling on it, and I acknowledge that. And so this is really a calendar problem more than anything else. But I think the nuts and bolts of it is Lane Kiffin's fun when he's on your team, but then as soon as he's not, you got to worry about all the rest of this stuff.
And that's why this is a thing. And I don't want to be someone that stands here on a moral high ground, but like, if you know that dude is bad and he's in your program, who cares if you're winning? Get rid of the dude. It's just like all the stuff up at Michigan that everybody knew what these guys were doing, but yet they just kept looking the other way because they're winning and they won a national championship. And it's why the stuff with Jed York doesn't surprise me, and I know they're on different levels. But, like, if you have to say that about a guy after he left your building, why didn't you get rid of him when he was in your building? Like, why are we just letting these people do heinous and bad things and get away with it? Like, if you're...
Because he wins.
And that's why none of it shocks me. Mm-hmm. And I think they're all doing it.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Because you want to win. I mean, it's what Harbaugh did at Michigan. People at Michigan, there's probably some, I'm sure some people up there have, you know, integrity and scruples and all of those things, but they were sick of losing to Ohio State. And so, okay, let's go. It's fun to beat Ohio State. So let's beat them, and who cares how we do it?
Also, the Assorted Crackers podcast is three gentlemen who are the most SEC looking and sounding dudes on the planet.
Well, the name.
Yes. It's a good play on words. Very good job who figured that out, because yes, it's four, three of the whitest SEC men again in history, and then Walker Jones, and they all sound exactly the same.
Yeah.
Michigan Stadium, or the Big Hole, turns 100 next year. It's getting ads for the first time in history. Coca-Cola, Meyer, Google, Gemini are going to be the first three sponsors to display their logos inside the 107,000-seat arena. This was from Michigan on Wednesday. SCORE released renderings of the sponsors' ads on the sides of the video board, on the wall at the base of the stands, and a national championship sign on the south end of the stadium. So outgoing AD Ward Manuel said, quote, Michigan Stadium is one of the most iconic and cherished venues in all of sports. That is laughter you're hearing. And we have been deeply intentional about preserving its tradition, character, and identity. As we introduce this partner program, we will do so with care and purpose, ensuring that any brand partner presence is strategic, tasteful, and aligned with the values of the University of Michigan, end quote. Thing or not a thing?
So I'm going to say not a thing to me, because I just assumed that they already had advertising in there. Most college stadiums have advertising in there. Ohio stadiums had advertising in it for as long as I can remember. I don't remember that being a big deal when they added it. It certainly felt like it happened way before I got here. I had no idea that they didn't have it. I didn't know it was a sense of pride for them not to have it. But like, it's also a little bit of an intelligence test. All of these guys are looking for found money, and Michigan just found a bunch of money. So to me, this isn't a thing, but I don't know like how a Michigan fan would feel about it. Maybe for them, this was a sense of pride that they didn't have any of this stuff. I don't know.
It's not a thing to me. However, I do think it's interesting that Ward Manuel, who is being forced out as the AD, talks about preserving character.
Yeah.
In strategic, tasteful, and aligned with the values of the University of Michigan, when we just talked about all the things Ward Manuel looked the other way on in his program, things that were way worse than throwing a Meyer ad up on Michigan Stadium or a Google ad on Michigan Stadium. It's just funny when the person giving the message is the one that just let all of this stuff go. It's almost like Deshaun complaining about the fans booing him and his situation off the field when, dude, you created your situation.
I know we had, I don't know if we've talked about this in a while, but PGA Tour Golf is coming back to Firestone in Akron. just not necessarily the, what would be the Champions or the Challengers tours. So the LeBron James Family Foundation Invitational is going to take place July 6th through the 7th at the South Course at Firestone Country Club next year. It's going to feature amateurs and pros from the tour's Pathway to Progression Pro Bound 5 program. The Pro Bound 5 program creates pathways for the top five players in the final Advocates Professional Golf Association collegiate rankings each season to gain membership to the APGA Tour. Thing or not a thing?
I'm happy for Firestone. That's an incredible golf factory. They have three courses there, not just the South. They're all pretty cool. It's set up for it. It's built for championship stadium golf, much in the way that Mirfield is. So it's kind of a layup on that. So I'm happy for that. But I also, this isn't going to come across my wavelengths. Like, I'm not going to be worried. This isn't a PGA Tour stop. They had just lost a senior stop, so that went away. So they're going to have professional golf back. And maybe for them, it's like a small step, right, towards getting back in a bigger way. Because I think that venue and I think the state of Ohio should have more than one PGA Tour stop with the quality of golf courses in this state. So I hope that it's that for them. This isn't something that's going to be that I'm going to be locked into.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything that a lot of people are going to be locked into, but a cool thing for the city of Akron and Firestone to continue having events there, a cool thing for LeBron to do in his hometown and helping out hopeful future PGA golfers.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Hopefully it's all cool, and maybe it's a bridge back. We'll see. Speaking of the PGA Tour, I did see something from our buddy Dave Shidlowski on what they're going to do at the Tour Championship. We'll get to that in two-a-days coming up in the final hour. Giants and Commies in the NFC East. Bishop and Friends right here.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The Big Ten and Southeastern Conferences are working to ban NFL players from returning to college. This comes after news former Browns tight end Daquan Wright wants to join LSU despite using his 4 years of eligibility, two of those with Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. The Big Ten released a statement Monday saying they will not allow any of their 18 schools to sign players who declared for the NFL. Yahoo Sports says the SEC is directing their 16 schools to not sign NFL players under threat of penalty. There's 5 days until week zero in CFB. The NFL is going to wrap their preseason this week. Browns host the Patriots Thursday. Bengals go for a perfect preseason 3-0 against the Eagles in Philly Friday. In baseball tonight, Guardians look for their seventh straight win. Cleveland's in Anaheim for game two of a three-game set. As for the Reds, Cincinnati looks to halt a two-game slide. Redlegs and Giants go tonight at 9:40. This update sponsored by Germain Toyota for unbeatable service and sales. Visit Germain Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Bryce Road or online at germaintoyota.net.
The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
The G-Man and the Commies on two-a-days. Before we get to that, I've been teasing this, and I do want to get to it. Dave Shidlowski, our good buddy, our golf bureau chief, as it were. He had this yesterday, right around this time. He was heading from St. Louis to Atlanta for the Tour Championship, he tweeted. CEO Brian Rolapp will roll out more plans for 2028, hearing that the 28 playoffs for the PGA Tour will be 2 weeks of match play. Yes, 2 weeks. Interesting if it happens. And then this morning, he confirmed it. 2 weeks of match play coming with World Cup type bracket system. Good on the PGA Tour. Now, that's interesting. Like, match play among the best players in the world, a true match play tournament? Like, we don't have anything like that. That's awesome. Good for them for thinking outside the box. I hope they get their calendar fixed and the PGA Championship comes back to August, but baby steps. And so to me, this is a step in the right direction. I like the PGA Tour here. And Bake, you always make this point. This is kind of what LIV forced their hand to do. LIV, whatever the legacy of it, the memory of it, however it's remembered, you do also have to acknowledge that it made the PGA Tour change the way it did its business. And that golf did benefit from that. Certainly PGA Tour players benefited from that. And I think golf benefited from that because I think this feels like a win. So it's a little bit of both. All right, time for two-a-days. Let's hit it, boys.
Bishop and Friends present two-a-days, our professional preseason preview of all 32 teams. Will your favorite team win it all this season? I doubt it.
We are in the NFC East, and we are starting with the G-Men. And, of course, a new coach with the New York Giants, and it is John Harbaugh. He took this job, and he could have really had any job that he wanted in the NFL coaching calendar. He took this one because he must have believed in Jackson Dart. And he must have believed in the assets and the people on their roster. And when you look at their roster, if you say to yourself, if you are a believer that Jackson Dart is a franchise quarterback, then it's hard not to like this roster. You have to assume that Malik Nabers comes back nicely from the injury that he had, which was catastrophic a year ago. So he's got to get back to that level. But you like that. You like what they have up front. Andrew Thomas has been one of the best tackles in football. He's continuing there, anchoring the left side. They draft Francis Mauanoa in the first round this year to help out on the right side. Jackson Dart at quarterback. Cam Scadaboo back from injury as well. He had a very nice start to his rookie year. Defensively, they are a full day. Jeez, up front, pass rushers. I mean, all of these assets that they've used on linebackers and pass rushers, from Abdul Carter to Kayvon Thibodeaux to Arvell Reese, name after name, Brian Burns, who they acquired from Carolina, they are going to get after the passer in a big, big way. To me, this is just a thing of, do you believe in Jackson Dart? Do you believe he can stay healthy? Key losses, not too many. More additions than losses anywhere else. And it's the reality is that John Harbaugh believed in this organization coming off of 4-13. He believed in an organization that has won a lot in all of our lives. I think I've seen them win 4 Super Bowls. Yeah, 4 of them in my life. And be in the mix a lot, have good ownership, and obviously he believed in Jackson Dart, and that's why he took this job.
Is this the team with the best offseason?
Just with Harbaugh?
Well, and then the list of guys that you said they added from the draft. There's also free agents that they brought in.
2 top 10 picks.
I mean, outside of, I think the Chiefs probably had the best because you just said Patrick Mahomes is healthy.
Yeah.
And that's probably the best news that any team got. But in terms of hiring a competent head coach that's an adult that can come into any building around the league and have instant bona fides, can be an instant follow me to freedom type,
mm-hmm.
with the additions for the players, the losses aren't crippling. This could be the best turnaround, I think, of any team in the National Football League from season to season. A week 8 bye, I think, puts the New York Football Giants in perfect position to establish exactly what they are before the trade deadline, if they need to be doing anything. You got the Cowboys and the Commanders in the first brick of your season. So before that bye, I think, sets up. I also got the Rams. There's the Texans on that. So a great litmus test week to week, also with some cupcakes, could have them sitting really pretty before you go into the month of November. Like, the more I read into the G-Men, I'm pretty bullish on them.
So, I don't know if I'm there with Jackson Dart, but this almost seems like the Giants, to me, are on the Detroit Lion football bros path. Because John Harbaugh comes in, he's definitely a player's coach. He is not, he's not Dan Campbell, but a football lifer. They've got Jackson Dart and Cam Scadaboo that are the ultimate run-through-a-wall football bros. They've got some ridiculous dudes at linebacker now with Tremaine Edmonds and Arvell Reese. They've been building their offensive line. It sure seems like if Jackson Dart can be a good quarterback, they might be the next Detroit Lions.
I like where you're going there. I don't believe in Dart. I don't think his style of play is conducive to playing multiple games. I think he puts himself in way too much harm's way. And I think at times his run through the wall football stuff is not the way that you want a quarterback to behave. And so, like, you can't take hits like that. You can't. And not stay upright. So both of you guys make the point. Like, they could make a it just comes down to, do you believe in Dart? That's it. I don't really have any other questions. I think other than that, they're in a pretty good spot. It's just a matter of, do you believe in him? There's nothing else here that I have. And then Scadaboo would be the same thing. Can he stay healthy, too, with all of the collisions that he takes? Like, if those guys can stay healthy and that they can, and Dart can elevate, then I think they could be a very, very interesting team.
To your point, Bo, especially on Dart, but those two, you've got to have a better backup quarterback than Jameis Winston, to me. You've got to go out. If you have Jackson Dart as your quarterback, you've got to pay for one of the top two or three backup quarterbacks. I like what they did this past week in signing Najee Harris. I don't know if he's got anything left in the tank, but with him and Tyrone Tracy and Devin Singletary, I think they're pretty good behind Scataboo in case he gets hurt. I have no trust in Jameis, and I know he can put up a lot of numbers, but he also throws a lot of interceptions.
Yeah, he's going to be fun, but he's going to lose some games. That's just kind of the way it goes with Jameis. We've all experienced that. Let's hit the categories on the G-Man coach grade. Bake, what do you have for John Harbaugh?
I think it's an A. I think he's one of the best in the National Football League, and if your job comes open, I think you should at least reach out and see if maybe he'd be interested.
I agree. A for John Harbaugh.
Yeah, I think he's A+. I mean, the winning speaks for itself. I give him a ton of credit for the way he flipped on the fly from Flacco to Lamar and changed coordinators to make all of that work. I mean, he's a multiple Super Bowl champion. He's about as good as it gets. It's definitely an A. Uniform grade on the Giants, Bake.
I just have this as a B- for me. I miss the old Giants on the helmet. I hate that they don't wear the gray pants all the time anymore. So maybe it's a nostalgia thing for me. I don't know if their uniform's ever been great, quite frankly, but B minus.
I'm a B with you as well. I think that the Giants word mark that they have on the alternate and the throwback, the helmet color is different than the uniform color.
That's a product of the 80s.
It's where an odd was blue?
Yeah, Reese, that was something that happened a lot. The Vikings had a similar thing, like their jerseys were a lighter purple than their hats.
The Cowboys.
Cowboys have four different blues on their uniform, but that was something that happened all the time in the 90s. Like, it was just been harder to match colors. I don't love anything about, you know, their branding or any of it. I just always thought it was kind of a C. But I can also acknowledge the iconic side of it. I think you guys are in the right spot with like a B level for it. I do think the NY is cool. That's a throwback to like the Frank Gifford old school kind of uniforms. And the Giants across is, you know, that's Lawrence Taylor is what you see. But that's a nostalgia thing more than it is probably the aesthetic that they're using. One franchise great you could add to this team, Bake.
So to me, there's really only one correct answer for this, but I feel like the Giants are pretty good at that position right now, and they may have. There's a chance that Arvell Reese could be the closest thing to Lawrence Taylor in a long, long time, athletically as good as he is. So I'm going to go to nostalgia, and I've always had a fondness for the 1986 New York Giants because they went to the Super Bowl and they kicked the crap out of John Elway after what they did to my Cleveland Browns. So give me the quarterback of that team, Phil Sims. Let's put him in here for Jackson Dart and see what he can do.
I think Michael Strahan would be a lot of fun. I go back to Victor Cruz doing the salsa in the end zone would be great with this wide receiver core, with this cast of characters that the G-men have this season.
So obviously, Taylor's the best player in franchise history, and I actually thought of a guy who's actually on their roster currently right now, like prime Odell Beckham Jr. would be very nice opposite Malik Nabers at wide receiver. I also thought about Mark Bavaro at tight end would be a hell of a warm blanket for Jackson Dart. But how can I pick anything other than replacing Jackson Dart if I say I have questions about him? Give me prime Eli Manning with this operation. Give me Eli Manning with these running backs and Malik Nabers and some of these other weapons and that offensive front. And Eli Manning won two Super Bowls. So I'll go Eli Manning. Franchise tier S through F, Bake, for the Giants.
I'm going to give them an A. And I know they've had some lean years here recently where they've missed on the coaches. But you mentioned it, four Super Bowls, Bo, in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of franchises that can say that.
No.
I'm going to give it a B tier. Everything, Baker, you had said just about the success they've had on the field, it feels like they've made historically a lot of really good personnel decisions, a lot of really good personnel decisions. The stadium's the one thing I think that takes it from an A for me.
That's interesting.
New York proper. They share it with another team. It always feels like the biggest pain in the butt in the National Football League to actually get to from a fan's perspective.
The turf is always the biggest issue, too. They can never get the turf right. I think they're an A by the definitions I've laid out with all of these. Like, four Super Bowls, you have to be an A. They're not quite S, but they're close. The four Super Bowls, ownership consistently, all of those things, big brand, all of it. They're probably an A for me, although acknowledge the stadium stuff specifically. Win it all, playoffs building or busting for the G-Man, Bake?
I don't think they're quite at playoffs yet, but I do think they are building, especially with that guy at coach.
Yeah, I'm recognized by how hard the NFC East is going to be this year. Like, it went from the NFC Least to the NFC Beast. I mean, those are four playoff-caliber teams right now, but I think the Giants are just a shade under that playoff mark this year.
I think they're building because of Harbaugh, but all eyes on Dart. All eyes. Like, they could pivot very easily. Like, the best thing for them would be to go, like, 6-11, 5-12, but Dart plays really well, and you draft high, and you can continue to add to that roster. That would be the ideal spot for them. The Washington Commanders is who we're going to talk about next. One of the strangest teams to wrap your head around, because 2 years ago, coming out of that rookie year, you would have said, my goodness, Jaden Daniels is ready to go. Weird offseason for him, weird training camp for him. And one of our guys, another linebacker, has found a home there. We'll do the commies coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Retirement from football hits everyone differently. For Devere Posey and Dane Sanzenbacher, it means sitting around watching sports clips on the internet and arguing about them. Search for Didn't Catch That on YouTube and subscribe. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We've had a good day of weather so far, and that'll continue for the rest of your Tuesday. Mostly sunny skies, just those passing fair weather clouds this afternoon. Highs in the upper 70s. Partly cloudy skies overnight, lows in the upper 50s. Still partly cloudy for your Wednesday, just a touch warmer with highs pretty close to 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is, and we are, as always, proudly brought to you by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly eight decades. Two-a-days continues in our nation's capital in the Washington Commanders. Few teams have had a better boost with a sale than the Washington Commanders have, from Snyder to Josh Harris and the group that owns them now. They got the uniforms at least as close back to right as they could, although there's one other thing they could have done that would have got it very, very simple and would have landed the plane. The one thing that's odd about this is there is some deja vu all over again with this, because it feels a lot like RG3's rookie season and his second season. So RG3's rookie season, he won rookie of the year. And you would have said at the end of that season, like, people maybe would have taken him over Andrew Luck. And then the injuries started to stack, and he never could get healthy, and ended up kind of getting wrecked. Same thing with Jaden Daniels. Guys, this team was in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago.
Life comes at you, I think, faster in the NFL than any other league.
Gosh, man. Like, you say you're on the precipice for Super Bowls, and to your point, Reese, now all of a sudden, you have the season last year where Jaden Daniels is hurt all the time. They're 5-12. They draft Sonny Styles. They add Stephon Diggs. Okay, that's going to help. They buttress the other side of the defense with Adafe Owe and Kalavon Chaisson and all these other things. They did lose Bobby Wagner, lost Austin Eckler, who you love, in terms of his versatility, but he was getting a little long in the tooth, so they've tried to replace that. But this just comes down to Jaden Daniels. And then he just had this really weird offseason where his people were worried about people being issued number 5 at LSU, and it's like, is his head in the right space? Did too much come too quickly for him at the NFL level? Was it too easy too quickly? So this is a year, to me, where this is just a referendum on Jaden Daniels. Like, they just need to see if he can revert back to what he was as a rookie when he was healthy. And if he does that, then this team's is another one that's going to be right in the mix.
And to your point, what they did in the offseason for the Washington Commanders was they added a little offensively, but bolstered their defense in hopes to provide a proper complement to what should be a out of a sophomore slump year for Jaden Daniels. But yeah, I can't help but think, where's his head been? Because I'm in training camp and I got my franchise.
Yeah,
the franchise is focused on, not the franchise he's playing for. It's really bad if that's the case.
It's a lot going on.
It's going to be such an interesting year for them, because I think the Dallas Cowboys are going to be pretty good. We think the Eagles are one of the best. We just talked about the Giants, and we think that they're a team on the rise. So what is this? Was that a one-hit wonder? for the Washington Commanders, or can they come back? Like, is Jaden Daniels really a guy? Is Dan Quinn really a good head coach? We know he...
Or is he 28-3?
Yeah, we know he failed right in his first time, but it looked like maybe he learned from that, and the second go-round was going to be good. Can he get this team to where it needs to be?
Jaden Daniels is a rookie. 69% completions, 35-68, 25 touchdowns, 9 picks. He ran for 891 and 6 touchdowns and led them to the NFC Championship game. Last year, played just 7 games, but in the 7 games he played, that completion percentage went from 69 to 60, 12-62, 8 touchdowns, 3 picks. He ran for 278, so the rushing's still there, but not at the clip it was before. So goes Jaden Daniels, so go the Washington Commanders, seems to be kind of the read on that one. But again, this division is going to be fascinating because there is a lot to keep your eye on in the NFC East, and we haven't even touched on the Cowboys and the Eagles, which we'll get to tomorrow. All right, let's hit the categories on the Washington Commanders, and let's start with coaching grade for Dan Quinn. Reese, let's start with you.
I think he's more 28-3 than a coach that can take his team to win a Super Bowl, but for Washington, I think you can just, Dan Quinn can get them there to their new stadium where maybe a contender's possible for certainly an NFC championship, but a Super Bowl. I'm going to give him a C+, understanding there's still room to build and that he lost his, you know, his franchise quarterback was never healthy fully last year.
It's interesting because if we do this at this time last year, I think it's a B+
yeah,
for Dan Quinn.
I agree.
Coming off of that year, and hey, maybe he just needed to get his feet wet. Now his second time around. This is probably right now, yeah, C+, C type of coach right here in Dan Quinn.
I'm going to go B. I think if you can coach a team to a Super Bowl and get a team, another franchise to an NFC championship with the rookie quarterback, you're better than average. But I also think there's a lot of average to below average coaching in the NFL. I don't know if he's anybody who can ever get a team over the top, but I think you can do a whole lot worse than Dan Quinn at this moment, but a lot of pressure on him, obviously, this year. Uniform grade for the Washington Commanders. Reese?
It's a C-. I think they've done better. Like, there's two grades for the Commanders that I think are coming out of the Dan Snyder era and certainly getting better, but I can't give them anything but an average for the uniform. The alternate's cool, but it feels like everybody's got an all-black uniform.
Yeah, they do.
So they've gone more towards their heritage here,
mm-hmm,
and I like that. I'm going to give them an A- on the uniform just because... It's kind of bland on the helmet. There's no real design or anything. But
that
the
W
color
stinks.
Scheme, the color scheme and the striping and all of that is perfect.
So it just comes back to the question that you'd have to ask is, why did you keep that W? I mean, why'd you keep Commanders? I would have got rid of that. And just you could have just been the Washington football team. They actually have one on the black helmet that's got a spear through the W. Just use that. If you are insisting on that W, just use that all the time and use that as the one. I think they could have done a running W similar to the one that the baseball team wears. But I do think at the very least, these are as close to the glory year Redskins Joe Gibbs as you can get without going all the way back. So I think that they're pretty close. I just think the W is kind of a strange one that they kept that W because that font just reminds me so much of Snyder. So I'm going to go B+. I always liked their uniforms. Their original logo was designed by Blackie Wetzel, who's a Montana Blackfeet Indian, and just an incredible, I know the family, and so I just thought that was such a really cool helmet through the years. One franchise great you could add to this team, Reese?
Santana Moss, I think, would be a lot of fun in the slot. Like, that would be a lot. That'd be great for Jaden Daniels. Sean Taylor also would just one of the best football players, college to NFL ever.
So, with Laremy Tunsil out, I thought about bringing our guy Jim Lachey back.
I thought about him too.
Pretty good.
And I don't like their running backs at all. Maybe Catron Allen will hit. So, of course, you got to think about John Riggins. But I'll tell you what, one of my favorite players growing up was Darryl Green. I loved watching him and Rod Woodson race each other in the NFL's Fastest Man every year. Willie Gault, throw him in there. You give me Darryl Green, old number 28, I believe it was. Maybe it was 24. Which one was 28. It, Bo?
28.
Give me him on the at the cornerback spot, locking down one side of the field.
I was going to go Darryl Green as well. I was hopeful that you'd go in another direction. Darryl Green was kind of like the quiet Deion Sanders is kind of what he was, but he was that good. He was that much of a lockdown corner. He would have been my number one choice. I'll go John Riggins for the fun of it. Big old Riggo wearing 44 in the backfield behind Jaden Daniels would be kind of a win, too. Franchise tier for the Washington Commanders, S through F, Reese.
This is a C tier, and I understand that they're climbing out of the F tier that they were with Dan Snyder.
Yep, I agree. I think it's a C. It would have been an F, though, 2 or 3 years ago, but I think they're trying to get out of that hole.
Through the 80s and 90s, it's an A-plus tier. This was correct. The hardest ticket in the National Football League. This is one of the most revered franchises in the NFL. It would go back and forth between them and Dallas as the most valuable franchise in the NFL for the longest time. Then Dan Snyder got a hold of it, wrecked it, moving to Landover, all of that. So you go from A to F. You guys both have it right. They are a C as it stands right now, but an optimistic C, a trending up C with new ownership, new stadium, franchise, getting the uniforms close to right. A lot of those things are starting to hit. Win it all, playoffs, building or busting. This is a tough one for them, Reese.
Yeah, I think they're going to flirt with the wild card. Their schedule is a bear looking at that. What would it be? Week 8 bye on this thing. Week 7, Giants, Niners into the bye. Eagles, Rams out of the bye.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, as I was looking at this roster today,
mm-hmm.
I think they've got some major holes on the offensive line, especially with Laremy Tunsil. I don't like their running backs at all.
No.
And I think their secondary sucks. I think this team is busting again.
Yeah, I think it's between building and busting. I don't think it's a playoff team. I think they're, and then that just comes down to Jaden Daniels. Like, if he can get back to kind of what he was. But if what he was last year is who he is, then it's a bust. And then you may have to rethink the quarterback thing. So that's a big spot that they're in this year. Both of these teams we did today are fascinating looks at what they could be, high or low for both of them. Could be a Grand Canyon of difference. Brian Manning covers them for Commander's Wire. He joins us in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on
the... The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's get some perspective on the Washington Commanders and the NFC East at large with Brian Manning. He is with Commanders Wire, and he joins us on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. I'm looking at this thing, and it feels like it can Jaden be what he was as a rookie? Complicated question, simple, but complicated. What's your view of that?
I think that Jaden can definitely be what he was as a rookie. I think he can actually be a better version of that, but... The questions are, the new offense with David Blough should be very Jaden Daniels friendly. It should help him evolve his game. But the questions are on the offensive line right now. The Laremy Tunsil injury was huge. Brandon Coleman will do fine at left tackle. He's not Laremy Tunsil, but when you move Brandon Coleman over to left tackle, you weaken left guard. He was expected to win the left guard job. And then center position is a mess right now. It's all... So much of what we're going to see from Jaden Daniels depends on that group in front of him. As far as the skill positions, I think it's a pretty good group.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. I think the receiver room looks like it's pretty good. We obviously know some of these guys pretty well. Last year, was it just the injuries to Jaden? Was it that simple, or was he not, even last year, was it not quite what it was the year before prior to the injuries?
You know, it's funny you mention it, because last year in training, he didn't look quite as sharp as he did the year before. There was just something seemed off. And some of that stems from, I think, not having Terry McLaurin, because he didn't have Terry McLaurin all summer last year. And it just set off the vibes were down from a year before. And then this year, throughout training camp, he has looked sharp. I mean, he has looked great, no matter who he's throwing to. And there's a sense of comfort in having Terry McLaurin back out there. He just means so much to this franchise. He just means so much to Jaden. So I think we're seeing, last year you could tell a difference to your question. And this year I think you're seeing a better version again.
the offensive line is something that they're going to have to overcome to be successful. On the defensive side, they obviously addressed that massively, not just in free agency, but obviously in the draft. You got our guy Sonny Styles there, who's going to be in the middle of that defense for a long time. How's Sonny looked?
Sonny's looked great. I see how on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, there's the analysts who quote-unquote watch film and are posting these clips of that long touchdown run on Saturday that had nothing to do with Sonny Styles. It was on the defensive end who didn't hold contain. And then there was other clips of Sonny who showed how great he is in coverage. He's only played like 30 or fewer snaps, but he's looked great. And they haven't even really used him to how they're going to use him in a season with blitzes or anything. He's looked fine.
In terms of the defense in general and all of the emphasis that the team put on it, what do you kind of make of just kind of that transition they have on the defensive side of the ball?
The biggest area of improvement is at edge rusher and linebacker. They overhauled both areas, and both areas were needed. It's a lot faster group this year. At edge rusher, you've got Owe and Chase on, who are going to dramatically improve that group. And at linebacker, you got Leo Chenal and Sonny Styles, of course, and Frankie Lulu is back playing a role that he's more familiar with, playing downhill versus rushing off the edge. And so you're going to see – and then you have Durante Jones and his new defensive coordinator. He's going to run that Brian Flores-like defense. And we've already seen little shades of it in preseason with the turnovers and the sacks. And that's just with these, you know, second, third-string players. So when the starters get in there, I think it's going to be fun to watch. I still have – a little bit of concern about the stopping the run. You know, it's been the whole starting unit hasn't been on the field together. So you can't really say they can't stop the run yet because you just don't know. But I would still have a little bit of a concern over that. And then the cornerbacks, that Trey Amos is barely practiced all. He's supposed to be your number one corner, or, you know, he's one of the starting corners. He hasn't practiced. So there are issues there that I would be worried about. But Washington hopes the pass rush will be so much better that it will aid the corners.
Brian, I was telling our audience, for our younger audience that listens, this was a model franchise in the 80s and 90s, and the Snyder ownership did what it did, and now the Harris ownership group's trying to dig their way out of some of that. And from 30,000 feet, I think about new stadiums. I think about even the uniforms looking very similar to what they wore in the glory years. Just from a fan base standpoint, what has this ownership meant to such a loyal fan base? And if are there any critiques that you have with them a couple of years into this?
Honestly, I can't think of too many critiques because the ones that they've honored the legends of the franchise. I mean, you see guys like John Riggins. He hated the name. I mean, he's not the only one that hates the name, but I mean, he had issues with the previous ownership. He stayed away from the franchise. He's back in the fold. He's calling preseason games now. He's all about the new ownership. You got Art Monk back. You got Daryl Green back. I mean, these are such important figures, and they're all aboard. They're going to games. You know, their numbers are retired now. It should have been done a long time ago. Then you have the fans. I mean, they're doing stuff with the tickets and little give. I mean, they still have a terrible stadium situation until the new one's built. They've dumped a ton of money into the place to make it as good as they can. I just don't know how anybody could complain about this group. The team president, I mean, it's a 180 over the new team president compared to the last two team presidents. And he's very fan-friendly. He goes on radio shows. I mean, there's communication now at all levels, and that's a good thing. They didn't have that before.
Brian, is the new stadium at the old RFK site, is that a full go?
It is a full go, yeah. It's 2030 is the projection of when they'll start playing there.
Wow, that's going to be exciting, man, when all that happened, because that place was a legendary spot. So all things trending in the right direction. I'll ask you this. I'll get you out of here on this. As you look at the NFC East, in your mind's eye, what is kind of your pecking order 1 through 4 heading into the season?
Right now, I would say I have Dallas ahead of Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia's quarterback, I think Philadelphia's offense is going to be an issue. Losing A.J. Brown will further expose Jalen Hurts as a quarterback. I'm not a big fan there. And then you have Dallas has improved on defense. And, you know, we already knew they could score points.
So I've got Dallas ahead of Philadelphia, and I've got Washington in at number three, and I've got an improved Giants team at number four. I could actually see the Giants moving up to three, and if things go bad for Washington, I could see Washington go anywhere from 7 to 10 wins. I mean, it's a, mm-hmm. it's a really weird thing. It's a really weird dynamic with Washington, but so much for them depends on the first 6 weeks. They've got to come out of that stretch at least 3-3.
That division feels like it's about to be really fun again. If they can be right on Jackson Dart with the Giants, and if Jaden comes back to form, this thing could be really fun again in a big way. Appreciate your time, Brian. Thanks for giving us a little bit of it today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
There he is, Brian Manning, Commander's Wire, joining us on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. If you are my age, your NFL was almost entirely viewed through an NFC East prism. It was Summerall, it was Madden, it was Cowboys, Giants, Eagles, Redskins. That was the situation, and they were on nonstop. And that division has always been the most watched because it's massive markets and massive brands. But it's the last team from this. Well, I guess the Eagles have won a couple. Think of all the championships. My God, the Eagles have won 2. Cowboys have won in my lifetime 3. Giants have won 4. It's a lot of championships to kind of go around there when you think of the success that division has had over the last 40 years in the National Football League. Get you 3 things on a Tuesday. Up next, Bishop and Friends right here on the
Football
Training Camp Report.
This report is brought to you statewide by Safe Light Auto Glass and Bob's Discount Furniture. With the return of defensive coordinator Matt Patricia and additions of offensive coordinator Arthur Smith and special teams coordinator Robbie Disher, head coach Ryan Day said it's important for them to lead their units.
You know, when you look at who we have, there's experience there. It's my responsibility to make sure I'm doing the things that the head coach is supposed to do. Having, you know, great people on staff allows me to do that, and I feel good that we have you know, an excellent staff. I think the camaraderie is good, and you know, the players feed off of the staff.
Day added that his team is in a race against time to get better in fall camp.
We've got to claw for every inch we possibly have. And I think having guys like Matt and Arthur who have experience of being in the NFL where every game comes down to the last play. That's just how it goes. And it's going to be like that, you know, in many games we're at this year.
We'll have more after this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, 5-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob!
Bob's Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Light Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at SafeLight.com. Safe Light Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Special teams coordinator Robbie Disher comes to Ohio State after 3 years in the same role at Illinois. Among those new to his unit is Baylor transfer kicker Connor Hawkins, who ranked 5th in the Big 12 in field goal percentage last year. Here's Ryan Day on Hawkins.
Yeah, Connor has done a good job. I think the consistency with the snap and the hold and the kick has been good. But now we just got to go put him in these situations in practice where there's a lot of pressure and see how he responds. His past would tell you that he will respond well, and so we've seen that so far in practice. But you know, we'll see. Marcelo, you know, has a really strong leg, and so it gives us an opportunity to have somebody to help with the kickoffs and also long field goals at times. So. Still early in camp, but that's what he brings, a really strong leg to the table.
The season opener for the Buckeyes is September 5th versus Ball State. We'll have another report tomorrow. This is Tyler Danberg on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
The new all-purpose sale, Buckeye Nation. Join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss this ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeyes sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, Reese, what do you have in the poll today?
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, how many games will Deshaun Watson start for the Cleveland Browns this season? Your options are 4 or less, 5 to 9, 10 to 14, or 14 to 17. 60% of respondents to the Daily Fan Poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub say 4 games or less for Watson. 34% say 5 to 9 games. 3% say 14 to 17. And just a tick over 1% says 10 to 14 games.
Yeah, I do think the margin's tough on this because the margin for error, because if in order for it to be viewed a success from Todd Monken's perspective, it probably needs to be, you know, like a dozen, something like that. Because when you make a decision like this, I said this last year when the Browns made the quarterback decisions that they made last year and they kind of had 4 guys in the mix, although at the beginning Shador wasn't, he just was catching up that first month. But as they had all those guys in the mix, it was like, it's your job until you play. It's your job until you play so poorly that you demand to be removed. So from Todd's perspective, if you name Deshaun Watson the starter, in his head, he's thinking he starts all 16 games, 17 games, and he's the quarterback. That's it. So that's the thing that's a little tricky with this. So I'm very interested to see how this goes by the time we get to the season, which is still 3 weeks away, unfortunately. Time for three things on a Tuesday. Hit it, fellas.
One, two, three
things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me. So NBC is as documented as a freshman now. And so our homecoming happens pretty quick. It's in like 3 weeks. And so he's got a little girlfriend, lovely, lovely young lady. And he's going to ask her to homecoming. Now, how does he know he's going to ask her to homecoming? Well, he doesn't. He knows because my wife told him, you have to ask her to homecoming. And this is what you need to do. And this is, my wife does not have girls. And so this has been like her lone singular thought and focus for about 3 weeks. Was this big ask. So when I asked girls to homecoming, in my mind's eye, all I remember was, hey, do you want to go to homecoming? That's the way I remember it. If I had a girlfriend, that was it. If I didn't, that's kind of how the ask went. I don't remember the pomp and circumstance. Guys, flowers were involved. Her drink from Starbucks was involved. Apparently, she has a drink that is known. Her drink from Starbucks was involved. There was a poster board with a catchy slogan on it. She plays volleyball. I'd be set if you tackled homecoming with me. All of these things happened. And I just said, like the other two were looking like, Dad, what is going on? Beatsy and Bootsy, like, what is going on? I said, guys, your mom doesn't have daughters. This is her time to shine. Let her go. I'm happy to report that that the fine young lady did say yes, was excited for all of his efforts. And it's one of those ones where you just trust your wife in situations like this. And she knocked it out of the park. And so in turn, so did he.
I mean, yeah, it helps when the blonde is the love consultant.
Yeah.
And when also it's being financed by the same consultant, you just have to follow the lead and she will not lead you astray. I mean, this is most case for most moms out there. Just listen to them.
It's Reese, it's kind of like you're a married man now. Man's got to know his limitations.
Exactly.
Know what you can do and what you can't.
It's a good job out of everybody involved, but especially your son, in understanding. Yeah. Just listen. Listen and do, and things will work out well for you. I'm going to make that my first thing. You have a woman in your life that's important. Listen and do. It will work out well for you.
Yeah.
First thing for me, I was out at AR's golf outing yesterday, and Bo, I know you're not surprised, but nobody puts on a golf outing like AR. I've played in a lot of them, and he does the best job. Obviously, the guys out there at Little Turtle know him, with him being a member there. And those guys do everything they can to make sure that outing is great. He has great sponsors. He has great prizes, and he raises so much money for Homeless to Homes, which is a dog shelter up in Marion. And everybody knows how near and dear to AR's heart all of that is. And it's just first rate. It couldn't be any better of a day to be out there on the golf course for such a great effort.
I've said this before about AR and everything that he does for the pups. I think it's the best use of person, platform, and cause as I've ever seen. And I just commend all of it. I just think he crushes all of it. And I've known him obviously a long time, did a show with him for years. I'm just so, it's weird because, you know, we're peers or whatever, but I'm just so proud of it, all that it's just awesome. It's something that we all should aspire to do, to find something that you care about, give a damn about it, and then do it right and actually do something about it that is tangible. And he is. I guess I just made that my second. Good job, AR.
I'll make my second thing a question we got from JB in the YouTube chat, Bo, getting a homecoming update, but JB would like an update on NBC's on-field performance from last week.
Boy, he played both ways, started both ways, had a really good toe touch reception on the sidelines, made some good tackles, had a fumble recovery.
Dang.
They lost the game. They were competitive, but lost a game, hard-fought game, lost, but were competitive. He played well. If we're doing like Buckeye helmet stickers, he probably would come away with 4 or 5. So it was a pretty good debut in that perspective.
Good job out of NBC there in game number one. So yesterday, you guys are stuck with me now for a while. I think I've got one day of PTO left, and that's going to be used for the state football championship. So I'm here for the next 2 or 3 months with you guys. Get used to it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm gonna step in the way of anything that has you taking time off to spend time with Fitoff. So we're done with that. I promise you.
It's AR, for your fine. Own good. It's for your own good, Baker.
That's tough, right. Love. Tough love.
Just trying to save you from yourself. Finally, number three for me. Look, I guess I've reached a point where like these alternate uniforms largely aren't for me. I think a couple of these ones the NFL dropped are kind of winners. I like the Packers one. I understand the Houston one's kind of cool. But I also think like one thing that you should have with all of these things is you should absolutely look like what you're supposed to look like, identifiable immediately. And the Lions, quite honestly, just look like the Carolina Panthers. All of that being said, I did see Andrew Lind, our buddy with this, uniform expert extraordinaire, pointing out on the social platforms that the rivalry uniforms last year were the number one selling items on Fanatics. So people gobble this stuff up, even if it's not for me.
Speaking of consumption, this from Dexturo on Twitter, which purports to be a food blog.
Okay.
KFC is going to be releasing a new Oreo chicken burger. And there's an image of this at DEXRTO. The collaboration features a cookie-style bun, mashed potatoes covered in crushed Oreo pieces, a fried chicken filet, and launches in China on August 28th. Even if this is fake, this is a hell of a job out of whoever came up with it, who concocted this idea. It's hilarious.
I think this is a spin on the Chick-fil-A, right? Like the waffles is buns.
Are they doing that?
Yeah, that dropped today. Chick-fil-A's doing like it's a chicken sandwich with waffles as buns.
T-Bone and Tyvus actually had those DoorDashed in this morning on the show, so they could
eat. Did they get a review?
I did not hear what they said or thought of the sandwiches.
I'm sure it's good. I would imagine it's good.
Final thing for me, don't go anywhere. Rothman and Ice coming up next. JP is in for AR as he is taking some well-deserved time off after the golf outing. They'll talk some recruiting news with Jeremy Birmingham at 12:30. And get Tyvus Powell's reaction to Deshaun Watson as the starter at 1:30.
Yeah, that to look forward to, which is nice. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends right here on the